श्रीकृष्ण ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरोः श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणाललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्णकरुणासिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिकाकान्ता राधाकान्ता नमोऽस्तु ते तप्तकाञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 रामो राम रामो हरे 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 कृष्ण. सो यू हैव कंप्लीटेड द फोर्थ कैंटो. नाउ वी आर हियर for a brief overview of the entire canto in whatever 2.5 hours. So we will not go into the details of the chapters or prayers or many other episodes, but we will briefly go through the flow, how the contents of the entire canto are flowing, what are the links between different chapters and sections and subsections. That will be the main topic for discussion. So, the entire Bhagavatam is considered to be the beautiful form of Krishna. So, the first two cantos are like the lotus feet of Krishna, which gives a prelude, introduction. And next two cantos, third and fourth canto, are considered to be the thighs of Krishna. Then fifth canto is like navel, and then it goes on. The 12th canto is like the head, 10th canto is like the lotus face of the Lord, and the smile of the Supreme Lord is considered to be the Rasa Panchadhyaya, the main five key chapters of 10th canto. So that is how the Bhagavatam is structured, is compared to Lord's beautiful form. So now we are in 3rd canto. Actually, the 10 cantos of the Bhagavatam are, according to Jiva Goswami, they are everywhere. In all 12 cantos, Atra Sarga, Visarga, Sthanam, Poshanam, Uti, Manvantara, Ishanukatha, Nirodha, Mukti, Ashraya, these topics are not meant to be assigned to each canto. They are there in throughout Bhagavatam with various degrees of emphasis. However, some cantos are predominantly discussing certain topics. Third canto is predominantly Sarga and Visarga. You see, Brahmaji's creation is there in third canto. In the till 10th chapter or 11th chapter, you will see Krishna's creation. the various types of sarga. Then 12th chapter is Brahmaji's creation. 20th chapter is Brahmaji's creation. So that is Visarga. And from 12th chapter till the end of the canto and throughout the 4th canto also there is Visarga. And the first half of 5th canto is also Visarga. So 3rd canto predominantly discusses Sarga and Visarga, although other elements are also there. So to give a brief overview of 3rd canto, it majorly discusses about the dynasty of Swayambhu Manu. Right? 3rd canto, then 4th canto and 5th canto first half. So they are all discussing the dynasty of Swayambhu Manu. Somewhere in the middle of the 3rd canto, Swayambhu Manu takes birth in the 12th chapter. So he has 3 daughters and 2 sons. So 3 daughters are Devahuti, Akuti and Prasuti. 2 sons are Uttanapada and Priyavrat. Right? So Devahuti gets married to whom? Kardamuni. Akuti gets married to? Ruchi. Prasuti? Daksha. So now in the 3rd canto, we see first half is Sarga and second half is like Visarga. That theme continues. So in the 3rd canto ending, the last 9 chapters are dedicated to Devahuti and her descendants. So while discussing the descendants of Devahuti, Maitreya Muni or Sukadeva Goswami, they were discussing about Lord Kapila's activities also and his teachings also. So there was a big philosophical episode within the description of the dynasty of Swayambhu Manu, right? Then the 4th canto, 1st chapter discusses the descendants of Akuti. Then 4th canto, 1st chapter itself has some discussion about Prasuti's descendants and it goes on till 7th chapter, right? So while discussing the descendants of Prasuti who got married to Daksha, there is a discussion of Daksha Yajna, Satis. How did Sati, did Sati. Sati did Sati, right? Not Sati actually, she burned herself because of the insult and neglect from her father. So that Daksha Yajna episode comes, that happens like for 7 chapters. Then from 8th chapter till 31st chapters are the descendants of Uttanapada. So Maitreya Muni was discussing about Uttanapada's descendant. So first is Dhruva Maharaj. So Dhruva Maharaj's episode is 5 chapters, 8th till 12th. Then Dhruva Maharaj's descendants will go till Prithu Maharaj. Then Prithu Maharaj's episode will go, I think 7 or 11 chapters, 7 chapters, right? So after that, Prithu Maharaj's descendants, it will go till Barhishad, Prachina Barhishad. Then his descendants, Prachetas. So these are all Uttanapada's dynasty. So after discussing the dynasties of the daughters of Swayambhu Manu, Maitreya Muni is discussing the dynasties of the sons of Swayambhu Manu. So 4th canto is predominantly about the discussion of Uttanapada's dynasty. Then Priyavrata is another son. That discussion we will see in the 5th canto beginning. 5th canto 1st chapter is Priyavrata's episode and his descendants will continue till 15th chapter. 5th canto first 15 chapters are the description of the descendants of Priyavrata. So 3rd, 4th and 5th cantos, these 3 cantos are discussing the descendants of Swayambhu Manu, right? The context is clear. So while discussing the descendants of Swayambhu Manu, we have the discussions of Sarga, Visarga, teachings of Lord Kapila, then Daksha Yajna, then Dhruva Maharaj's episode, Prithu Maharaj's episode, then Prachetas episode, Prachina Barhi, Puranjan Upakhyan, and Jada Bharat's teachings, all these are appearing as a part of the story. Okay. So now, yeah, this is seeing it 3rd, 4th and 5th cantos in the with the glasses of Swayambhu Manu's dynasty. Now you see 3rd, 4th and 5th cantos with the glasses of 10 topics of Bhagavatam, right? Sarga, Visarga, Sthanam. So Sarga, Visarga, Sthanam are the major topics discussed in these 3 cantos. The first 4 chapters of 3rd canto are dedicated to the meeting between Vidura and Uddhava and their discussion. Then 3rd canto 5th chapter till 11th chapter is predominantly Sarga. Then Visarga comes from 3rd canto 11th chapter itself, 11, 12. And Visarga is already described in 3rd canto 10th chapter also. In 10th chapter there are 10 types of creation. Out of them 6 are primary creations. Then 3 are secondary creations by Brahma, 1 is mixed creation, right? So there is little Visarga there also. So predominantly from 12th chapter till till 5th canto middle we have Visarga discussion. Then 5th canto 16th chapter till the end of the 5th canto we have Sthanam. Sthanam is the geographical location of various planetary systems in the universe. How is Bhumandala situated, all that. So these three cantos are predominantly discussing these three topics, and Visarga is the biggest topic amongst the three also. Right, it is spanning over three cantos. So now we will, just in few minutes, we will go through the full canto. You must be having this chart in your handbooks. So the fourth canto has 31 chapters. Out of 31 chapters, first chapter is predominantly dedicated for discussing the descendants of Akuti. Right, so Akuti is married to whom? Ruchi. So Akuti plus Ruchi and their descendants. So in that the prominent personalities are Yajna and Dakshina. So that is this first chat. Then towards the end of first chapter, we will have the discussion of Prasuti getting married to Daksha and then giving rise to 16 daughters. Out of them, Sati is one of the daughter who could not produce a child. Then second chapter till seventh chapter goes in Daksha Yajna. So why Sati did not get a child? That was the question. Because there was some enmity between Shiva and Daksha, and eventually that led to the death of Sati. So that's why she could not produce a child, right? That episode goes for till seven chapter. Then the dynasty continues. Dynasty did not continue. The dynasty shifts to Uttanapada. So Uttanapada's dynasty is discussed. So in that, the beginning is the dynasty of Adharma. Right, the first few verses of each chapter is the dynasty of Adharma. Then he begins with the discussion of Uttanapada's dynasty. Then in that, Dhruva Maharaj is there. He was insulted by his stepmother. He became very determined to get a position which is much superior to his great-grandfather Brahmaji also. And he does tapasya. Then he gets darshan of the Lord. Then his material desires get transformed. Right? Then he becomes the ruler. Uttanapada is retired. Now, then Dhruva gets married, then his brother gets killed by some yaksha, and Dhruva goes to fight with the yakshas, right? Then Kubera comes, gives him good instruction, and then eventually Dhruva also gets retired, and then he goes back to Godhead along with his mother. So that is the discussion in next five chapters, 4.8 till 12. Then comes the link between Prithu and Dhruva. Amongst the descendants of Dhruva are Vena, then Anga. So Anga, Vena, so they are the two prominent kings. Then after that, Prithu comes, and then his discussion is there for 4.15 onwards. 15 till 23. How many chapters? 8 chapters. 8 or 9 chapters. 9 chapters of Prithu Maharaj. Then the descendants of Prithu Maharaj would continue, and then we'll reach to Prachina Barhi episode. So Prachina Barhi is absorbed in Karmagandic sacrifices, and his sons Prachetas would go out for posterities before taking up the responsibility of kingdom. On the way they meet Rudra, Lord Shiva. Then the Rudra Geta episode comes, 24th chapter. So after discussing that, then the camera shifts to Prachina Barhi. What's happening in the kingdom while Prachetas were doing austerities underwater. Then Punjana Upakhyan, right? So Narada Muni teaches Prachina Barhi. Then that goes for 5 chapters. Then again, what happened to Prachetas? So Prachina Barhi is delivered by Narada Muni through Punjana Upakhyan, allegory. Then what happened to Prachetas? So that happened, that discussion was there in 30th and 31st chapters, last two chapters, right? So that is a brief outline of 4th canto. Now we'll go chapter by chapter. So the first chapter, so now you can ask me questions. After 10 chapters, you can ask questions. Then after 20 chapters, you can ask questions. Then after 31 chapters, you can ask questions. And your question should be related to the flow. Because this is an overview class, you can ask about the overview, how the things are flowing, what are the connections between different sections. anything very specific about, you know, some prayer or some philosophical point or some allegorical point in Paranyanopakhyan, that we can do it some other time. Okay, now we'll stick to overview. So in the first chapter, we have the discussion of the daughters of Manu. First, Akuti, the daughter of Swayambhu Manu, she gets married to Ruchi, Prajapati Ruchi. And they give birth to Yajna and Dakshina. So Yajna is Supreme Lord incarnated. Then Dakshina is Mother Lakshmi only. Right? So they are the eternal consorts. So but they take birth from one set of parents only. Right? So you cannot consider them brother and sister at this point, because after they are eternal couple, right? They can choose any medium for their manifestation. If you see Prithu and Archi, they are also like being the incarnations of Supreme Lord, they are also like consorts only, but they are born from the same body. Right? So Yajna and Dakshina are born from Akuti and Prasuti, but Dakshina, Yajna is adopted by Manu. Right? So Yajna is grandson of Manu, but he was adopted as a son. Right? That was the condition. This is called, what is dharma? What dharma? Putrika dharma. Right? So you can adopt the son of your daughter. Right? Not brahmacharis. So a king can adopt the son of a daughter, and then he can raise that child as his own son. Then that daughter's daughter can get married to this son. Right, that is called Putrika Dharma, and it happened in the case of Yajna and Dakshina. And Yajna and Dakshina give birth to 12 Tushitas. Right, they are the demigods. So if we reach 8th canto, then we will have this discussion of Manvantaras. In Manvantara, there are 6 elements. Manvantaro, Manurdeva, Manuputra, Sureshwara. So the 6 elements of any Manvantara are Manu, Manuputras, then Indra and all the demigods, and 7 sages and an Amshavatara, an incarnation of the Lord. These are the 6 elements of any Manvantara. So in this Swayambhu Manvantara, this Manu is Swayambhu Manu. Manu Putra Sarhu, Uttanapad and Priyavrat. Then Indra is this Yajna. When there is no qualified personality, the Supreme Lord himself takes the post of Indra. Then Manu Putras, we discussed. Then sages are Marichi and others, we discussed earlier. Then Manvantara Avatara is Yajna. Okay. So Yajna is playing the role of Indra and Manvantara Avatara also. Okay, Supreme Lord. So these are the 6 elements of first Manvantara. So that is about the genealogical line of Akuti, in brief. Then we have the genealogical line of Devahuti. So this was already discussed earlier, but a kind of summary is there. So Devahuti and Kardama had 9 daughters and 1 son. He is Kapiladev. And his teachings are elaborately described for 9 full chapters in the 3rd canto. So here we have the description of all the daughters of Devahuti and Kardama. 9 daughters got married to 9 sages. And they produced these many, you know, sons and daughters. So Kala got married to Marichi, and their son was Kashyapa, okay, and Purnima. Then Anasuya got married to Atri, and their sons were Dattatreya, Soma and Bhrugu. So this particular incident is elaborately described here. All others' names are mentioned. So Atri wanted to have a son who is as good as Supreme Lord. I want the Supreme Personality of Godhead as my son. So he performs tapasya, Atri and Anasuya. Then he doesn't know, he has no knowledge of who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he is performing tapasya for Supreme Lord. And at the end of his tapasya, all the 3 Supreme Personalities in the universe came, Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwara, along with all the demigods. And they said, you called for a Supreme Person, all 3 are Supreme, all 3 of us are Supreme. Although Vishnu is considered to be most supreme, but this, because Atri was in a confusion, all 3 got manifested in front of him. Then he also offers certain prayers, and all 3 of them with their Amshas take birth from Atri and Anasuya. So their names were given here. Dattatreya, Soma and Bhrigu. Bhrigu is an incarnation of Shiva. Then Dattatreya is an incarnation of Vishnu. Soma is an incarnation of Brahma. So all these three sons take birth from Atri and Anasuya. So this was described. Right? So Vidura's question here. Vidura actually asks this question. Why did Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva desire to take birth in Atri's house? In response to that, Maitreya speaks whatever I have briefed just now. Next, after describing the descendants of Devahuti and Akuti, Maitreya gives a benediction. Anyone who hears this description of this dynasty with faith will be relieved from all sinful reactions. That was a benediction. Then Prasuti's descendants. So Prasuti got married to Daksha and they had 16 daughters. The first 13 daughters were given to Dharma. And one of them, her name is Murti. So she gave birth to Naranarayan Rishi. So in this context, Maitreya Muni discusses all the beautiful prayers that are offered by various exalted personalities to Naranarayan Rishi. Then, after being worshipped by various devatas, Naranarayan Rishi went to Gandhamadana Hill and engaged in austerities. And these Naranarayan Rishi only, they entered the bodies of Krishna and Arjun and then did all events in Mahabharata. Then more about Naranarayan Rishi we will find in 12th canto, more of their activities in relation to Markandeya Rishi. 12th canto, one more year for you to reach there. Next, so 13 daughters of Prasuti and Daksha are discussed. Okay, all their names are given and whom they got married to. And Murti's descendants, Naranayan and Rishi, are more elaborately described. Then comes the other descendants, other daughters of Prasuti. So 14th daughter of Prasuti, her name is Swaha. She married Agni and they had three sons, Pavaka, Pavamana and Suchi. And these three sons gave birth to 45 children. Altogether, these 45 plus those three, 48 plus Agni. All these 49 are called fire gods, right? Agni Devatas. There is one main Agni Devata and his sons, three, they are also called Agni Devatas and they have 45 sons. Total 49 are Agni Devatas. Then 15th daughter, Swadha, she got married to Pitris and they gave birth to Vayuna and Dharani. And Sati, the 16th daughter, she was given to Shiva and she did not have a child. So in this context, Vidura gets a question. Okay, so Sati gave up her body before reaching maturity because there was a dispute, misunderstanding between her father and husband, Daksha and Shiva. That was the reason she did not have a child. So now at this point, Vidura asks a question. How could Daksha hate Shiva? Right? Daksha was very affectionate to daughter and Shiva is glorious in many ways. Right? So father is naturally affectionate to her daughter. On top of it, she is the youngest daughter. Right? She must be deriving more affection from her father. So that is one reason. Second reason, Shiva is so glorious. So what was such a dispute between Shiva and Daksha which led to the death of Sati, right? And leaving her childless before her death only. So that was the question. That is the link from first chapter to second chapter. Then we enter the second chapter. So Daksha insults Shiva. So once there was a great sacrifice organized by many demigods. That sacrifice would go for 100 years. That's a very huge sacrifice. So in that sacrifice, all great demigods were sitting. Brahma was sitting and Shiva was sitting. And Daksha, being a very great expert Prajapati, he entered that sacrificial arena. And he observed Shiva was not standing. Right? Many other personalities stood to respect Daksha, but Shiva did not stand. Then Daksha spoke in a very angry voice. Here, I would speak about the conduct of sadhus. I am not speaking out of envy or ignorance. Initially only he was declaring. I am not speaking out of envy or ignorance or arrogance. Although all of them he is actually having all that envy, arrogance, ignorance, everything. So this Shiva is a shameless person. He destroyed the fame of all the Lokapalas. Then he was proud, he was polluted, and he accepted my daughter. So being my son-in-law, he is in an inferior position and I am in a superior position. When I am entering the assembly, he is supposed to stand up and then give me respect. And he is not doing that. And he is a monkey-eyed rascal, and he failed to give me respect like that in various ways. He criticized Lord Shiva, right? Shiva means auspicious, and he is auspicious only in the name, only by the name. He doesn't have any auspicious qualities. He has so many inauspicious qualities. Why? Because he roams naked like a madman. He sometimes cries, he sometimes laughs. He lives in crematoriums. He is surrounded by ghosts and demons. He has scattered hair. So like that, in various ways, he criticized Lord Shiva. But although all these qualities that Daksha is enumerating, they are very special ornaments of Lord Shiva. For example, you take this. He sometimes laughs and cries out of ecstasy of love of Godhead. And he lives in crematoriums and surrounded by ghosts and demons. So nobody would like to preach to ghosts and demons. Nobody would like to deliver them. But Shiva takes compassion on them and tries to deliver them also. So these are all special qualities only. But because of his envious vision of Lord Shiva, he is seeing all of them as bad qualities in Lord Shiva. Then he is externally unclean, internally unclean, like that he criticizes. And his criticism goes to Brahma also. Only because Brahmaji insisted I had to give my beautiful daughter to this monkey-eyed Lord Shiva. Otherwise, I had no inclination to make him my son-in-law. So he thus criticized Brahmaji also. Right? So now after criticizing, he didn't stop. After insulting, he didn't stop. He cursed Shiva also. May Lord Shiva not receive any portion of sacrifice in this, along with other demigods. Other demigods can receive their portions in sacrifice, but Shiva should not receive like that. And angrily he walked out of assembly. Sabha tyag kar diya. Although everyone was trying to pacify Daksha and stop Daksha, still he just left the assembly. Then Nandi became angry. When his master was insulted and cursed like that, Nandi became very angry. He cursed Daksha. May you become a fool. May you reject Supreme Lord. Then may you become absorbed in karmakandic activities, and may you get a goat head, not a Prajapati head. So like that he cursed Daksha, and he did not stop there. Nandi became even more excited, and he started cursing Daksha's followers also. Let all of them take repeated birth and death. Let them become completely attached to karma. They become indiscriminate in eating. So like that, he cursed all the followers of Daksha, Brahmanas. Then Bhrigu started cursing, because Bhrigu is on the side of Daksha at that point, and Bhrigu started cursing Shiva's followers. Let them become atheists. Let them become obstacles to genuine scriptures. Let them become addicted to intoxication. Like that, Bhrigu also cursed. So this cursing and counter-cursing was happening, and Shiva could not speak a single word. If he also speaks, then it might agitate more people, or it might inspire more people to speak. So Shiva silently walked out of that place. But other creators, other Prajapatis, they performed this 1,000-year sacrifice, although Shiva was not present in that sacrifice. So the sacrifice continued. So that's how this chapter ends. Now we enter the third chapter. So after this sacrifice is over, 1,000 years passed, then Daksha started another sacrifice. The name of that sacrifice is Vajapeya or Brihaspati Sava. So Daksha did not invite Lord Shiva for this sacrifice. Shiva is a very prominent demigod. On top of it, Shiva was son-in-law of Daksha. So Daksha had the responsibility to invite Lord Shiva, but Daksha did not invite out of his arrogance and envy. And none of his followers also were invited. So Sati hears about this sacrifice. So it's a very huge, big event, right? It must be well advertised. So Shiva and Sati came to know about that sacrifice. Anyways, then Sati developed a desire to go for that sacrifice, father's sacrifice. She started convincing Lord Shiva. So she said, "It is your father-in-law's sacrifice, and all the demigods are going. My sisters are going there. We will also go. I want to meet my relatives. And when we go there, we'll receive very beautiful presentations. And I'm longing to meet my dear sisters, aunts, and mother. So I want to see that sacrifice. Let's go." Then Shiva was not responding. Then Sati started to convince Shiva more. "So you may be free from all expectations, right? You may have ideal behavior, ideal character, but don't expect that kind of ideal behavior from me, right? Because I'm a conditioned soul, I'm not so great like you, and I'm a woman, and I don't know you completely. And see, other women are going with their husbands, so if we also go, that would be nice." So like that, she was very much expressing her desire to go for Daksha sacrifice. And it's natural, I'm a daughter of my father, I'm a beloved daughter, so I must be going. So please be merciful. Then Shiva responded, "Yes, although you are not invited, you can go to your friend's house, provided the friend doesn't find fault with you." Right? If the host is having a mentality of criticizing or finding fault with the guest, that kind of place is not very good for that guest. So we should not go uninvited. Then Sati says she had Daksha has six opulences: Vidya, Tapo, Vair, Vitta, Vapu. So all that he has. So then Shiva says he may have all those opulences, but all those opulences are only false if the person is proud. So Daksha is very proud. He cannot see the glory of devotees, right? So harsh words of relatives are more painful than any enemy's harsh words, right? Some close friend comments on you, that will cause more pain than somebody in local train. You are trying to climb the local train and somebody passed a comment on you. It doesn't matter. Takla, he said like that, it doesn't affect you so much. But if your co-brahmachari says that, it is painful. So then she also presents an argument. I'm his favorite daughter. He will not be harsh with me. No, you may be his favorite daughter, but he is not happy with me. So his dislike towards me will be directed towards you also. Because you are connected with me, he will dislike you also. He will disrespect you also. Then Sati says, "Do you hate him, Lord Shiva?" "No, no, no, I don't hate him. But he is envious of my superior position and he hates me." Then whole problem started because you did not stand up in that assembly, right? You should have stood up. Then Shiva says, "Intelligent people will respect the super soul within." So I was already in meditating on super soul. I need not specially get up when Daksha enters. He says, when she says super soul is there in Daksha also, yeah, super soul is there in Daksha also, but I'm directly in touch with the super soul. I'm in samadhi when Daksha entered. So I was not at mistake. So my suggestion to you is please don't go, right? Because he insulted me. If you go, it might lead to your humiliation and even death. So I warn you. But Sati was in two minds. But finally she decided to go. She was trying to look at Shiva angrily and then she was unable to control her emotions, right? So two upadhis were pulling her, right? Daughter upadhi and wife upadhi. Okay, she wants to show her affection towards her father and she wanted to be submissive towards her husband also. So, but finally, this side was pulling her more. So, she, without the consent of Lord Shiva, she had to leave for Daksha sacrifice. So, seeing that Sati was going alone to Daksha's house, all the followers of Shiva also accompanied her for her protection. Right? So, Sati reached the sacrifice of Daksha, and she understood there was no arrangement that is made to make an offering to Lord Shiva. That was an insult. On top of it, Daksha was not receiving her nicely. All the aunts and sister and mother, they all received her well, but Daksha was not receiving her well. So although all these people were giving her gifts, she refused all her gifts. She refused to even sit there. So then Daksha was also not responding, right? Sacrifice was devoid of any offering to Lord Shiva. So Shiva's followers got up to kill Daksha, but Sati stopped them. relax, you don't do anything. And she personally started condemning Daksha. She criticized Daksha. Who except you would hate Lord Shiva? Shiva is so glorious, but you are unnecessarily being envious of Lord Shiva. Right? And she gives the list, who is the best person, who is the worst person. So Shiva is the best of all best, you are the worst of all worst. You are Ati Asadhu Tama. One who sees only bad in others and tries to magnify them, he is called Asadhu. He is Ati Asadhu Tama. You are Asadhu also, like the highest degree of Asadhu you are. Right? You are Ati Asadhu Tama. So, and even if a Vaishnava forgives you, the dust of the lotus feet of Vaishnava cannot tolerate an offense to a Vaishnava. So, you are subject to be ruined. So, Shiva's name destroys all sins. His fame is pure and his orders cannot be neglected. And you have offended Shiva. So, like that in various ways, she glorifies Lord Shiva and she criticizes and condemns Daksha also. And because of my connection with you as a daughter, I am contaminated. I cannot stay in this body anymore, which is a product from your body only. So I want to give up this body. I am gaining only embarrassment. I can tolerate no connection with you. Right? So she gave up her body by invoking fire from her body, and she was burnt to ashes. She was dressed in yellow, sat facing north. All these details were also given. So meditating on Lord Shiva's lotus feet, she gave up her body in fire. Then all the associates of Lord Shiva started attacking this Daksha and other people, right? Then powerful Ribhus appeared and attacked Lord Shiva's followers and Shiva's followers. There were only few people accompanying Mother Sati, so they started fleeing away. So all this was informed by Narada Muni to Lord Shiva. Right? So this is what has happened in Daksha Yajna. Shiva, this is what has happened with your wife. So do something. Then Shiva plucked a hair from his jata and then threw on the ground, and Virabhadra came out. He was like a big, demon. He's not demon, but his looks are like very furious. Right? Very wonderful looks. So Shiva ordered Virabhadra, you go and destroy Daksha's sacrifice. Okay, because of him, my wife had to leave her body. So Daksha came, Virabhadra came. And when Virabhadra was approaching Daksha's sacrifice only, there were so many calamities. There was a huge dust storm, right? People started speculating, what happened? Why this happened? Then some people said, it is all because of Daksha's sinful activities only. He offended Lord Shiva. And he did not even stop Sati when she was committing suicide. Right, Sati was entering death and Daksha did not do anything to stop her also. Because of all the sinful activities of Daksha, we are seeing this kind of huge storm here. Virabhadra is attacking us. Then Virabhadra, he destroyed the sacrifice along with his followers. He broke the pillars, he broke the quarters of women, assembly hall. He contaminated the area with urine, stool and all that. And he tied up Bhrugu, Daksha, Pusha, Bhaga. And Virabhadra tore off Bhrugu's mustache, broke up out this Pusha's teeth, and Virabhadra chopped Daksha's head with an axe, right? So Daksha's body was lying there, headless body, right? And Shiva's followers became joyful, and all the associates of Daksha became very distressful. They were in grief. So Virabhadra threw that head of Daksha into the sacrificial fire, and he went back to Kailash. So that is the big fight. So this was very elaborately described by Maitreya Muni there. So now, Daksha's sacrifice was stopped. So all the demigods became very bewildered, and then they approached Brahmaji for help. See this kind of inauspicious thing has happened. So please do some help. Then, Brahmaji, to pacify Lord Shiva, he went to Kailash along with all these demigods. So Brahma first warned these demigods, better you die because you have offended Lord Shiva. But because you have desire to live, better you beg forgiveness from Shiva. Right? Because you have offended Shiva, you should give up your life. That is the default action, option A. Option B is, because you wanted to live, you go and beg forgiveness. So I will also accompany you. You go and then he may not forgive also. Right? And demigods and all, Brahmaji and all the demigods were going towards Kailash. And on the way, the description of Kailasha mountain was given. Right? Brahmaitreya Muni gives a beautiful description of Alakapuri and Kailasha mountain. So when the demigods and Brahma reached the place where Lord Shiva was sitting with all the sages, Shiva was very peaceful. He was being worshipped by the associates of himself, Lord Shiva. So Brahma went and started glorifying Lord Shiva in the mood of Shaivites. So whenever the glorification of demigods is happening, sometimes they are glorified as if they were the Supreme Lord. But we need to understand that they were being glorified as representatives of Supreme Lord. They are representing certain aspect of Supreme Lord. Right? Brahmaji, Shiva is an incarnation of Supreme Lord only. He is a Gunavatara. Right? So Shiva is Krishna himself, right, doing certain activity. Right? Taking care of the quality of mode of ignorance. Right? So that is the reason why Shiva is also glorified sometimes as good as Supreme Lord. You are the Lord of universe, you are the Prakriti and Purusha, you are superior to Shakti, Nirguna Brahman. Like that, in so many ways, Brahmaji glorifies Lord Shiva. And Brahma's glorification has some intention behind it. You create, maintain and destroy. Brahmaji says, Shiva, you create, maintain and destroy. Thus, you only created the sacrifice. Now, with Daksha's death, the sacrifice has stopped. So now you have to maintain it. And you created Varnashram system. And why are you punishing Brahmanas now? Daksha is a Brahmana. Then you created, you bestow Swarga and liberation to people. Then why this pious Daksha has to die like this when you are there? So if you are not, it's not your anger, I know. It may be by your mercy. But you do not have to kill sinful people. Because law of karma will kill them. You need not personally do that action. So he was saying like that. So please spare Daksha now. Give him life back. And devotees are merciful to offenders also. Please be merciful to Daksha. And you are not influenced by Maya. Be merciful to those who are conquered by Maya. You are not influenced by Maya, but Daksha is influenced by Maya. So your responsibility is to be merciful to him and give him life back. Please forgive. So my requests to you in summary are, revive this incomplete sacrifice. Give life back to Daksha. Give Bhrugu's eyes back. Give Bhaga's eyes back. And Pusha's teeth and Bhrugu's mustache back. So like that, he was placing so many requests in front of Lord Shiva. That's how the sixth chapter ends. Then we enter the seventh chapter. This is the sacrifice performed by Daksha. Okay, Daksha again comes back to life. So Shiva responds, "My dear Brahmaji, I punished all these people only to teach them, right? So let Daksha have a goat head. I have no problem. Let him come back to life, but not with Daksha's head, goat head. So let Bhaga see his portion of sacrifice through Mitra's eyes. Let Pusha eat through the mouth of Daksha." So like that, he made some adjustments. He kept the punishment also little bit, not very severe, but he relieved them from that punishment also. So let the priests work with the arms of Ashwinis and hands of Pusha. Like that. So Daksha gets a goat head, finally. So after getting a goat head, Daksha started offering prayers to Lord Shiva. "Oh, my dear Shiva, you have punished me mercifully. Because you and Vishnu do not neglect even Brahma Bandhus like me, I got my life back. So because you only created the Brahmanas for protecting Vedas and spiritual knowledge, now you are protecting me. I am a Brahmana. Right? I will continue this. I cannot repay you." Like that in various ways, Daksha also offered prayers to Shiva. So when Daksha came back to his senses and then bowed down humbly in front of Shiva, Vishnu came there. Right? So far Vishnu did not come because Daksha was in an offensive attitude towards Lord Shiva. So now Vishnu came. When Daksha came back to senses, then this Purodasha was offered to sanctify the sacrificial arena, right? Because Virabhadra contaminated the sacrificial arena and it was purified by mantras and other rituals. Then Lord Vishnu arrived, and this beautiful verse comes to describe Lord Vishnu. శ్యామో హిరణ్యరశనోర్కకిరీటజుష్టో నీలాలకభ్రమర ముండితకుండలాస్య శంఖాబ్జచక్రశరచాపగదాశిచర్మ. సో దిస్ ఈస్ 8-హ్యాండెడ్ ఫామ్, రైట్? శంఖ, అబ్జ, చక్ర, శర, చాప, గద, అసి, చర్మ. సో దీస్ ఆర్ డిఫరెంట్ డిఫరెంట్ థింగ్స్ దట్ హీ హాస్ హోల్డింగ్ ఇన్ హిస్ 8 హ్యాండ్స్. గద, దెన్ చాప ఈజ్ బౌ, అండ్ శర ఈజ్ యారో. సో ఆల్ దీస్ ఆర్ ది వేరియస్ వెపన్స్ దట్ కృష్ణ ఈజ్ హ్యాండ్లింగ్. అండ్ చామర ఈజ్ ఆటోమేటికలీ ఫ్యానింగ్ హిమ్, రైట్? నో బడీ నీడ్స్ టు హోల్డ్ ద చామర్. సో యా, దిస్ ఈజ్ అనదర్ బ్యూటిఫుల్ పెయింటింగ్ ఆఫ్ ద సేమ్ సీన్. సో వెన్ విష్ణు ఎపియర్డ్ ఇన్ ది సాక్రిఫైస్ ఆఫ్ దక్ష, ఎవ్రీవన్, దేర్ ఆర్ సో మెనీ గ్రేట్ పర్సనాలిటీస్ ఇన్ దట్ సాక్రిఫైస్, ఆల్ ఆఫ్ దెమ్ స్టార్టెడ్ ఆఫరింగ్ ప్రేయర్స్. ఇన్ దట్ కంటెక్స్ట్ మైత్రేయ ముని అటర్స్ దిస్ బ్యూటిఫుల్ వెర్స్, అప్యర్వాగ్ వృత్తయోయస్య మహిత్వాంబుభిర్ ఆదయ యథా మతి గృణంతి స్మ కృతానుగ్రహ విగ్రహం. ద ఎబిలిటీ టు ఆఫర్ రిలవెంట్ ప్రేయర్స్ టు ద సుప్రీం లార్డ్ ఈజ్ ఆల్సో బెస్టోడ్ బై ద సుప్రీం లార్డ్ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్. ఈవెన్ ఇఫ్ వన్ హ్యాస్ టు ప్రే ఆల్సో, దట్ ఎబిలిటీ హ్యాస్ టు కమ్ ఫ్రమ్ ద లార్డ్ ఓన్లీ. సో అకార్డింగ్ టు దేర్ కెపాసిటీ, అకార్డింగ్ టు హౌ మచ్ దే ఆర్ ఎంపవర్డ్ బై ద సుప్రీం లార్డ్ టు ఆఫర్ ప్రేయర్స్, టు దాట్ ఎక్స్టెంట్ దే కెన్ ఆఫర్ ప్రేయర్స్. సో ఆల్ దీస్ పర్సనాలిటీస్ హెడెడ్ బై దక్ష, ఆల్ ది ప్రీస్ట్స్, అసెంబ్లీ సదస్య, శివ, భృగు, బ్రహ్మ, ఇంద్ర అండ్ హిస్ వైఫ్స్ అండ్ సేజెస్, సిద్ధాస్, ప్రసూతి, అండ్ ఆల్ ఆఫ్ దెమ్ ఆఫర్డ్ ప్రేయర్స్ టు లార్డ్ విష్ణు ఇన్ దిస్ కంటెక్స్ట్. దెన్ విష్ణు గివ్స్ ఏ వార్నింగ్, నాట్ వార్నింగ్, ఈ కైండ్ ఆఫ్ మైల్డ్లీ చాస్టైజెస్ దక్ష ఆల్సో. మై డియర్ దక్ష, యూ షుడ్ నెవర్ కమిట్ సచ్ కైండ్ ఆఫ్ అఫెన్సెస్. మై సెల్ఫ్, బ్రహ్మ అండ్ శివ ఆర్ నాన్ డిఫరెంట్, వి ఆర్ సేమ్. ఇన్ వాట్ సెన్స్? బికాస్ యా, ఇట్ ఈస్ ట్రూ దట్ సుప్రీం లార్డ్ ఈజ్ వన్ అండ్ దట్ ఈస్ విష్ణు, బట్ దట్ సేమ్ సుప్రీం లార్డ్ కెన్ టేక్ డిఫరెంట్ నేమ్స్ ఫర్ డిఫరెంట్ పర్పజెస్. ఫర్ ద పర్పస్ ఆఫ్ క్రియేషన్ హీ అపియర్స్ యాజ్ బ్రహ్మ, వన్ ఆఫ్ ది గుణావతారస్. ఫర్ ద పర్పస్ ఆఫ్ డిస్ట్రక్షన్ హీ అపియర్స్ యాజ్ శివ. ఇన్ దాట్ సెన్స్ శివ అండ్ బ్రహ్మ ఆర్ సేమ్ యాజ్ ది సుప్రీం లార్డ్, బట్ దే ఆర్ ఇన్ఫీరియర్ టు సుప్రీం లార్డ్ బికాస్ దే ఆర్ కమింగ్ ఫ్రమ్ ద సుప్రీం లార్డ్. దే ఆర్ నాట్ యాజ్ దే ఆర్ నాట్ కంప్లీట్లీ ఈక్వల్ టు ద సుప్రీం లార్డ్ ఇన్ ద సెన్స్ దట్ దే హ్యావ్ లిమిటెడ్ పవర్స్, దే హ్యావ్ స్పెసిఫిక్ పర్పస్ ఫర్ దేర్ ఎగ్జిస్టెన్స్. అట్ ద సేమ్ టైమ్ దే ఆర్ ఈక్వల్ టు ద సుప్రీం లార్డ్ బికాస్ సుప్రీం లార్డ్ ఈజ్ ఓన్లీ యాక్టింగ్ లైక్ దెమ్, రైట్? సో ఇన్ దట్ సెన్స్ ఆల్ త్రీ ఆఫ్ అస్ ఆర్ ఈక్వల్, సో యూ కెనాట్ అఫెండ్ ఎనీ ఆఫ్ అస్, రైట్? ఓన్లీ ఇగ్నోరెంట్ పీపుల్ విల్ సీ డిఫరెన్స్ బిట్వీన్ మీ, నాట్ జస్ట్ బ్రహ్మ అండ్ శివ, ఐ ఆమ్ దేర్ ఇన్ ఎవ్రీబడీస్ ఇన్ ఎవ్రీబడీ, రైట్? యూ కెనాట్ సీ డిఫరెన్స్ బిట్వీన్ మీ అండ్ అదర్ జీవాస్, రైట్? డివోటీస్ సీ మీ ఆల్సో అండ్ అదర్ జీవాస్ ఆల్సో ఆన్ అన్ ఈక్వల్ లెవెల్, ఇన్ ద సెన్స్ దట్ దే ఐడెంటిఫై ద కనెక్షన్ ఆఫ్ ఎవ్రీ లివింగ్ ఎంటిటీ విత్ ద సుప్రీం లార్డ్ అండ్ రెస్పెక్ట్ దెమ్ బికాస్ హీ ఈజ్ అన్ అసోసియేట్ ఆర్ హీఈ్ అ పార్ట్ అండ్ పార్సల్ సుప్రీం లార్డ్ ఇన్ దట్ సెన్స్, రైట్? దిస్ నాట్ మాయావాద్, దిస్ కెన్ బి ఇంటర్ప్రిటెడ్ యాజ్ మాయావాద్ బట్ ఇట్ ఈస్ నాట్ మాయావాద్ ఫ్రమ్ భాగవతమ్స్ అండర్స్టాండింగ్. సో లైక్ దట్ లార్డ్ శివ, లార్డ్ విష్ణు గివ్స్ ఏ స్మాల్ క్లాస్ టు దక్ష. దెన్ మైత్రేయ కంక్లూడ్స్ దిస్ దక్ష యజ్ఞ ఎపిసోడ్. సో దక్ష వర్షిప్స్ విష్ణు, శివ అండ్ అదర్ డెమిగాడ్స్ అండ్ ఆల్ ది దేవతాస్ రిటర్న్ ఫ్రమ్ దేర్ సాక్రిఫైసెస్. అండ్ ది సతీ, రైట్, హూ గేవ్ అప్ హర్ బాడీ ఇన్ దక్ష సాక్రిఫైస్, షీ వాజ్ రీబార్న్ యాజ్ పార్వతి టు మేనక అండ్ హిమాలయాస్, రైట్? ద లార్డ్ ఆఫ్ హిమాలయాస్. అండ్ దెన్ షీ అగైన్ చోజ్ శివ ఓన్లీ యాజ్ హర్ హస్బెండ్, రైట్? దట్స్ హౌ దట్ ఎపిసోడ్ ఎండ్స్. సో మైత్రేయ ముని గివ్స్ ఎ బెనిడిక్షన్, దాట్ పర్సన్ హూ కాన్స్టెంట్లీ హియర్స్ ఆర్ నెరేట్స్ దిస్ పాస్ట్ టైమ్ విత్ డివోషన్ డిస్ట్రాయ్స్ ఆల్ సిన్ విత్ డివోషన్, లైక్ దట్. నెక్స్ట్, దట్ ఎండ్స్ దిస్ వన్ ఎపిసోడ్, వన్ పార్ట్ ఆఫ్ ఫోర్త్ క్యాంటో. యూ హ్యావ్ ఎనీ క్వైరీస్ యూ కెన్ ఆస్క్. ఎనీ క్వశ్చన్స్ రిలేటెడ్ టు ద ఫ్లో? He didn't ask only.
I mean, in the part, it's more like he's offering prayers. Because you said it's kind of like he was talking to him.
He offered prayers.
He sees him as superior.
Sorry? Brahmaji talk to Shiva, you are saying? Yeah, there is prayer and there is request, appeal. It's prayer, you can say. There is an element of prayer in that. Next, the lineages of Manu's daughters were described so far. Akuti, Prasuti, Devahuti. Devahuti was described where? Third canto, last few chapters. Then Akuti, first chapter. Prasuti, first chapter only. But her descendant is there from second till seventh. So daughters are done. Now the sons of Swayambhu Manu. Okay, that is, he begins with Uttanapada. So before that, the lineage of Dharma is, Adharma is described. So Adharma married falsity. And they gave birth to Dambha and Maya. And they gave birth to Nirukti and greed. Then they gave birth to Krodha and Himsa. They gave birth to Kali and Durukti, harsh speech. And Suruchi is representing this harsh speech. Then they gave birth to Mrityu and Bhiti. And they gave birth to Yatana and Niraya, hell. Right. So this is the whole lineage of Adharma. So after that, one who hears the description of this lineage of Adharma three times attains piety and washes the sinful contamination. So now he begins the description of Uttanapada's dynasty. So one day Uttanapada was sitting in his simhasan with his son Uttama. He had two wives, Suruchi and Suniti. Suruchi's son is Uttama. Suniti's son is Dhruva. Suruchi means she is beautiful. Suniti means she is very truthful and gentle and good, well-mannered. Right? So Niti and Ruchi, they're little, in the name itself suggests their qualities. Anyways, so Dhruva Maharaj also saw in this nice scene, his father is sitting on the throne with his brother. He also got the desire to go and sit along with his brother on father's lap. But when he went, father was not very much inviting, because Suruchi was present, right? Dhruva's stepmother was directly present there. Then when he was attempting to go on father's lap, Suruchi very arrogantly, very haughtily chastised Dhruva. She said, "You cannot sit on father's lap. You cannot sit on this throne. If at all you want to sit, if you desire to sit, go and worship God and take birth in my womb and become my son. Then you will get the qualification to sit on your father's lap." Right? The qualification to sit on your father's lap is to take birth from my womb. Right? Your father may be he, but your mother also should be me. Then only you will be able to sit. So like that, she insults. And on top of it, Uttanapada did not speak a single word. So he did not control Suruchi, or he did not speak a single word in favor of Dhruva. That angered Dhruva more. So with great tears in his eyes, very much agitated, on top of it, there's a small child and having a Kshatriya spirit. So he went to Suniti, and Suniti tried to pacify Daksha. The first word that Suniti said was, "Don't find fault with others. Do not be envious of your stepmother, although she insulted you." So anyone who receives a pain must have given some pain to others in their previous lives, right? That is, we are just reaping the result of our previous actions. Please don't be envious of anyone. And Suruchi is right. So your father doesn't consider me like his wife. What to speak of wife? He doesn't even consider me like a maid servant. That Suruchi was the favorite wife of your father. So because you have taken birth from my womb, this is the treatment that you will get. So this is obvious. And she also said one more right thing. That is, you should worship Supreme Lord. So only Supreme Lord can fulfill all your desires. No one else has the ability to fulfill desires. That's why, Tvameva vatsa ashraya bhritya vatsalam mumukshubi mrugya padabja paddhatim. Right? So you should go and take shelter of Lord Vishnu. And whoever is desirous of liberation, all of them have taken shelter. right? Not only desire for liberation, even if somebody has desires for kingdom or any other things also, material success also, they have taken shelter of Lord Vishnu only. Your Manu, your father, grandfather, he worshipped Lord Vishnu. And your great-grandfather, that is Brahmaji, he worshipped Lord Vishnu. So everyone worshipped Lord Vishnu, so you should also go and take shelter, if at all you desire to attain some position. And I am just one mother. And the Supreme Lord Krishna can give you the affection of millions of mothers. Right? So no one except the Lord can extinguish your suffering. Right? Ananya bhave nija dharma bhavite manyasi avasthapya bhajasva purusham. Manasi avasthapya. You establish the Supreme Lord's deity in your manas, your heart, and bhajasva. Start worshipping him there. So like that he suggested. And Dhruva got the clue. If I have to fulfill my desire, I have to worship the Supreme Lord. Somehow he happened to hear that he is there in the forest. All sages will go to forest and worship him. Then Lord will give audience. So Dhruva, he just left the kingdom. Right? Then Narada Muni, being a Trikala Darshi, so he understood. There is one small Kshatriya child who became so determined to see Krishna in the forest to attain some personal ambition, that's fine. But he saw the determination of Dhruva and then he came there to guide Dhruva. So he said first, you are just a small child. Why are you so much affected by insult? Right? So if you can understand this insult and honor or dishonor, then you should understand, you should be intelligent enough to understand that everyone is controlled by previous actions. That thing she also told, Suniti also told. So we are controlled by our previous actions. And also you should be intelligent enough to understand that everything is happening by Supreme Lord's will. It is the will of the Supreme Lord that you are insulted. Just accept it, tolerate it, go ahead in your life. Don't unnecessarily come to forest and do many other things. And you are coming here into the forest to worship the Lord, that process is very difficult. The process that your mother taught is not easy, right? So you can try it once you become little older. Now you are just 5 years old, you should go back. So one who is satisfied amidst happiness and distress is qualified to cross samsara, and not the person who is reactive like you. So Ganadhikam Madham Lipset, he speaks all these verses. And basically, Narada Muni wanted to test Dhruva Maharaj. How determined is he? And in the course of testing Dhruva Maharaj's determination, Narada Muni definitely speaks some very high subject matters. If you see these instructions of Narada Muni in the proper light, in the highest Vaishnava standard, they are all very beautiful verses. Accept everything as Supreme Lord's will. Right? So that the topmost pure devotees will accept like this. We have examples like Kitra Ketu, Prachetas, then Kunti Maharani, Pandavas, who accepted everything as Lord's will. Bharat Maharaj, Sita Devi, all of them. They are highest instructions. But Narada Muni is finally attempting to test Dhruva Maharaj. How determined is he? And Dhruva Maharaj is very honest. He said, yeah, what you say is correct, but that is meant for Brahmanas. I am a Kshatriya. So I am definitely pierced by the harsh words of Suruchi. And your good instructions cannot be received by me, because I have different kind of spirit. My desire is, I want the best position in all the three worlds. If you have a solution for it, please give me. I understand you must be having that solution. You are capable of giving that idea, right? You are capable of showing a path to fulfill my desire. Please do that. Then Narada Muni instructs Dhruva on the process of attaining his goal. Then he says, the path shown by your mother was best. What is that path? Tvameva vatsa ashraya bhrutya vatsalam. Go and take shelter of the Supreme Lord. That is the best path for any desire. So akama sarva kamava moksha kamava dharadhi. You may be having a different desire, but the path remains the same. Whatever desire you may be having. And that desire also will get transformed eventually. That he didn't reveal. That he had to realize. Dhruva had to realize. So you worship Vasudeva with concentrated mind, go to Madhuvan, take bath regularly, sit, offer prayers, meditate on the Supreme Lord, and take this, do some pranayam. He just gave a combination of some deity worship and Ashtanga yoga, he just combined, finally meant for making him a devotee. So meditate on the Supreme Lord. And how do I meditate? On what form should I meditate? And he describes the beautiful form. Tarunam ramaniyangam arunoshthekshanadharam pranatashrayanam ramnam sharanyam karunaranavam. Like that, so many features of the Supreme Lord's beautiful form are described. And he gives a mantra. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So mantra meditation is there. Deity worship is there. Little bit of yoga is there. He combines all of them. And you go and do some austerity. So lifestyle also, he says, control your speech, eating and mind. And if you don't get a DT, marble DT, carved DT, or brass DT, you can make a DT with mud only and then worship. He gives the compromise. Applying instructions according to time, place and circumstances. That is another theme from this discussion of Narada Muni and Dhruva. Then Narada Muni, after directing Dhruva Maharaj for attaining his goal, he goes to Uttanapada, his father. Uttanapada was very regretful. Arey, what did I do? I didn't stop my son. That is a lesson we need to learn from Uttanapada, that we need to act, we need to take a decision, we need to act appropriately at that spur of the moment only. If we miss that chance, then we will not get back that moment again. Right, better late than never is there, but better not be late only. That is the first option. Okay, if you get late, then that's a different thing. But now Uttanapada had the full opportunity to stop Dhruva, but he did not act like that. And once Dhruva left, then he is regretting. Right? So that is one lesson we can learn. But Narada Muni consoles, don't lament. Your son will be very popular. He will be protected by the Supreme Lord. And his popularity will be that he will be protected by the Supreme Lord. He will be popular as the person who is protected by the Supreme Lord at such a young age. So he will soon return, don't worry. So Uttanapada gave up his interest in his family life and kingdom. And he was constantly thinking about Dhruva Maharaj only. Then Dhruva performed austerities. First month, he ate. First month he started eating only kapitta fruits once in 3 days. Then second month he started eating some leaves and dry grass once in 6 days. Third month he drank only water once in 9 days. Fourth month he took breath, he took air once in 12 days. Fifth month he controlled his breath also, he started meditating on the Lord and he stood motionless like a pillar on one foot and the weight of 1 5-year-old boy suffocated the entire universe. And all the demigods went to Vishnu and then said, hey, what's happening here? Because Dhruva Maharaj reached Samadhi in his concentration and determination. Right? He reached Samadhi and all the worlds trembled and all the demigods went and approached the Vishnu and said, what's happening? Then Vishnu pacified them, reassured them, don't worry, my devotee, one small boy, 5-year-old boy, he is doing some meditation. So I will go and fulfill his desires. So don't worry, go back. Then the Lord comes in front of Dhruva. And Dhruva was meditating on the Lord. So inside, he was meditating on the form given by Narada Muni with closed eyes in full samadhi. Suddenly he lost the vision of that form. Then he opened his eyes. And that form was right in front, standing in front of Dhruva. That is the 400 Vishnu form. Who came along with Garuda to give darshan to Dhruva. Dhruva Maharaj just fell flat on the ground offering obeisances and he had intense desire to say something, to offer some beautiful prayers. But because he was a very small child, he felt incompetent and nothing is coming out of his mouth. Although he has a lot to say, but he is unable to express any of them. Then Lord took his conch shell and touched the head of Dhruva Maharaj. And he was empowered. Yontah pravishya mama vacha mimam prasuptam sanjeevayat akhila shakti dharasvadham nam anyam cha hasta charana sravana swagadin pranan namo bhagavate purushaya tubhyam. So when he got the touch of the conch shell of Dhruva Maharaj, then he was empowered. All his senses were awakened by the touch of Lord's conch shell and he started offering beautiful prayers. so we can't discuss all of those prayers. So some, you know, ya nirvachastanu bhritam dava pada padma dhyanat bhavajana katha shravanena vasyat sa brahmanisya mahimanya pinatham abhut king tvantakasi lulitam patatam vimanat. So one prominent theme, common theme amongst all the prayers in Bhagavatam, especially the prayers in fourth canto, are the all the devotees reject the results of karma process and jnana process. By following the karmakandic process, one will enter heavenly planet, Swarga. And by following the jnana process, philosophical speculation, mental speculation, one will enter impersonal Brahman. Right? So here Dhruva Maharaj is saying, I reject all of them. Yanirvutas tanubhrtam tava pada padma dhyanat bhavajana kathasravanena vasyat. Means, if at all happiness has to be attained, that can be attained only by two ways. One, tava pada padma dhyanat, by meditating on your lotus feet. Second, bhavajana kathasravanena, by hearing. By meditating on the lotus feet of the Lord and by hearing your katha, hearing about you. Then sa brahmanisva mahimanya pinatham abhut. Where is that kind of happiness in emerging in Brahman? Sayujya mukti me nahi yeho. Then kim tvantakasi lulitat patatam vimanat. What to speak of heavenly planets? You go there and just come down, going up, coming down. Right? That is swarga, useless, I reject. Brahman, sayujya mukti, I reject. Right? What I want is just association of devotees and discussing about Krishna in the association of devotees. That's all I want. That is what he expresses in the next verse. Bhaktim muhu pravahatam tvayime prasango bhuyad ananta mahatam amalashayanam yenanje solbana muruvyasanam bhavabdhim neshye bhavad guna katham ritapanamattaha. So, you are asking, you don't want liberation. You just want to be in the association of devotees and hear katha. Are you foolish? Ask for liberation. He may say like that. I can easily cross over, right? If I have the association of your devotees who are amalashayanam, bhuyat ananta mahatam amalashayanam, yena anjasa ulbana muruvyasanam bhavabdhim. This bhavabdhi, this material ocean is very difficult to cross over, but anjasa, very easily I can cross over if I have the association of your devotees and if I can hear Krishna katha in the association of devotees. Dhruva Maharaj establishes this. Same theme comes in Prithu Maharaj's prayers. Same theme comes in Pracheta's prayers. Right? So, this is a very important theme. Then Dhruva Maharaj completes his prayers. Then Lord offers benedictions to Dhruva Maharaj. Then after getting the darshan of the Supreme Lord, Dhruva Maharaj forgot about his desire only, what he wanted. Right? And he never bothered to ask all of them. But Lord remembered. So, may you achieve the greatest place in three worlds, Dhruva Loka. Then, you will also achieve your father's throne. You wanted to sit on your father's throne? Sit there. For 36,000 years, you can sit there and rule the entire world. And after 36,000 years, you wanted to attain the highest position in this planet? That is Brahmaji's. I will give you superior to that. That is my abode only. Right? You come to my abode. That is Dhruva Loka. That will be called as Dhruva Loka. That is the pivotal. It's not highest in the sense of geographical location. Satya Loka is above this Dhruva Loka also, this pole star also. It's not positionally, geographically positionally, but as far as its stature and the greatness is concerned, it is highest. So that was given to Dhruva Maharaj. So then you are envious of your brother also, Uttama also, you are angry with your stepmother also, your brother will die. And in separation from your brother, in search of your brother, your mother also, your stepmother also will die. Right? So all these petty desires that Dhruva Maharaj had in his immature way, they were also fulfilled by Supreme Lord. That induced a great amount of regret in Dhruva Maharaj later. Then Dhruva Maharaj started lamenting. I attained the lotus feet of Supreme Lord just in 6 months. Right? But see my foolishness. I prayed for something which is perishable. I should have accepted Narada Muni's advice and had gone back home. Not back to Godhead, back home. Right? So I got affected by Maya or dualities. And I unnecessarily saw my brother Uttama as my enemy. So he regretted a lot. Right? This lamentation is also very important and instructive for all of us. that we may get so many material desires, but we should not work on them, right? We need to pray that material desires don't enter in us, so like that. But bhakti is such a glorious path that even so, those material desires also can be dovetailed in Krishna's service with some expert guidance. So Dhruva Maharaj's material desire was dovetailed performing devotional service by Narada Muni's expert guidance, and eventually Narada Muni made Dhruva only understand the futility of his material desire, right? He will make him realize how nonsensical was my desire. Then Vidura asked, but Vidura, here Maitreya Muni is telling Vidura, here Dhruva Maharaj had a material desire and he was lamenting, okay, after he realized that his desire was very petty. Then Maitreya Muni says, Vidura, you are not like that. Navai Mukundasya Padaravindayo Rajo Dushastata Bhavadrisha Janaha. So a devotee like you will not have that kind of material desires. You people will desire only seva of Supreme Lord. Vanchanti tad dasyam ritertham atmano. Vanchanti tad dasyam. You want to become the das of Supreme Lord only, nothing else. Right? So he glorifies. Then Dhruva Maharaj reaches his father's palace. Right? And Uttanapada somehow he comes to know about this news. Dhruva Maharaj is coming back. Okay. So he started taking his chariot, and Suruchi, Suniti, Uttama, all of them came in palanquin to receive Dhruva Maharaj. So the reunion happened. Uttanapada received Dhruva Maharaj very nicely. And when the right time came, when Dhruva became mature and all the citizens are loving him and all the ministers have approved him, then Uttanapada enthroned Dhruva Maharaj and he entered the forest to perform his austerities. He did not wait for Dhruva Maharaj's marriage also. So he just left. So when time comes, he cannot stop. My responsibilities are fulfilled. I should not unnecessarily take care of my sons or family. Right? Now he is matured. He can take care of the family himself and kingdom himself. Let me focus on my devotional service. Uttanapada retired. Right? He entered the forest. Then Uttama, the younger brother of... So Uttanapada retired. Right, his story is ended. Now coming back to Dhruva Maharaj's story. So Uttama, he was killed by some yakshas. Right? So Dhruva Maharaj became very angry. How can somebody kill my brother? So the 10th chapter describes the marriage of Dhruva Maharaj with Uttama. Marriage of Dhruva Maharaj and Uttama's death. So Dhruva Maharaj married Brahmi. He had two sons, Vatsara and Kalpa. Two sons. Then Dhruva Maharaj also married Ila. Right, through her, he had a daughter and a son called Utkala. So they are like three sons and one daughter he had. Then Uttama was once killed by an Eksha while he was hunting, and Suruchi just was going to search Uttama, and then she entered a forest fire and then she died. And Dhruva became angry. He went to Alakapuri, and the description of this ferocious fight between Yakshas and Dhruva Maharaj was described in the 10th chapter. Right, Dhruva Maharaj went there and blew conch shell, and all the ladies got frightened. Then 130,000 Yakshas came to fight with Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj shot three arrows, right, and they shot six arrows, right, each of them, six arrows into 130,000. Those many arrows were coming simultaneously on Dhruva Maharaj to attack him. Right? And Dhruva Maharaj was covered by all those arrows. Right? Just his sun is covered by clouds. And all the Siddhas started crying, and then Dhruva Maharaj, uninjured, he just emerged from that cloud of arrows which are coming on him. And Dhruva Maharaj killed them. So he was killing, and all the Yakshas just fled away, and everything was calm. Then Dhruva Maharaj was not relaxing. Yakshas are like mayavis. They can attack me at any time. Still, he was very alert. Then suddenly, all the Yakshas, they started throwing so many illusions and pouring blood and urine, pus, stool, and created so many magical illusions because they are all demoniac people. Then Dhruva Maharaj was taken aback at that point, and all the sages started praying for Dhruva Maharaj and reminded Dhruva Maharaj of Narayanastra. So if you want to defeat all these magical illusions and demoniac illusions, invoke Narayanastra. The holy name of Narayana can counteract all these magical spells. So Dhruva Maharaj invoked Narayanastra and all the illusions were dispelled. And Dhruva Maharaj killed so many yakshas, and then in that rage of fight, Dhruva Maharaj started killing so many yakshas. Then Swayambhu Manu appeared there and he spoke. Their excessive anger is not very good. One yaksha killed and they were attacking, you also attacked, but now we are unnecessarily killing so many yakshas, unnecessarily. It's like you are getting influenced by anger. There are two things. Engaging anger in Krishna service is one thing. That is what Arjuna did and Hanumanji did. But Dhruva Maharaj here was coming under the influence of anger. Right? So engaging a phone in Krishna service is one thing. Coming under the influence of that phone is another thing. Getting right? So now this becomes the boss and you become the subordinate. Okay? In other case, you remain the boss and he becomes the subordinate. You are engaging it in service. So that's different. So now when he is crossing the limits, Swayambhu Manu came and pacified him. It doesn't befit our dynasty. Right? It is the fault of one yaksha only. Right? You are killing so many such people. So this is act is impelled by bodily consciousness. And you achieved such a great position and you are achieving the abode of Vaikuntha at the age of 5-6 years only. You are reassured by the Supreme Lord himself that you will come back to me. Now you are in such a great position. Why are you unnecessarily spoiling that reputation by becoming angry now? Okay, it doesn't befit your stature. So like that he glorified Dhruva Maharaj and instructed Dhruva Maharaj in various ways. So Lord is pleased when you are tolerant, right, towards seniors, compassionate towards inferiors, friendly towards equals, and takes others' happiness and distress as one's own. Like that he gave many good instructions. Then Manu further explains the nature of things. These are all many technical details of their discussion. So Dhruva Maharaj said, I am still unable to give up my false ego. Then again, surrendering to the Supreme Lord is the only solution. Now you have offended Kuvera, so please, you should pacify Kuvera. So Kuvera is the Lord of Yakshas, right? So Dhruva Maharaj, by killing so many yakshas, he was offending Kuvera. So he has to beg forgiveness from Kuvera, right? That ends the 11th chapter. Then, so Dhruva Maharaj approaches Kuvera and Kuvera says, I am pleased because you have given up hatred, which is very difficult to give up. You are in full vigor to fight with yakshas. And suddenly someone comes and don't fight. He stopped. That is the glory of Dhruva Maharaj, to be submissive to a good advice from a superior. So Kuvera was pleased by it. And he said, you are sinless because you didn't kill the yakshas. Right? Neither the yakshas killed your brother. Time is the cause of the death of both parties. Right? So, but ignorant man thinks in terms of body. Now you came back to senses and then gave up your envy or hatred or anger towards yakshas. I am pleased with you. Go back to your capital, worship the Lord, and you can ask any benediction from me, he says. So Dhruva Maharaj said, yes, I want this benediction. What is that? I want constant remembrance of the Lord. This is the benediction I want. So if you see positionally, Dhruva Maharaj, who attained the darshan and who was reassured by the Supreme Lord, in the childhood only, he stands little superior to Kuvera also. Still, Dhruva Maharaj was collecting a blessing, benediction from Kuvera. Right? So blessing is beyond the giver. Once Radhananda Maharaj gave a talk, which is like the whole theme of the talk is that only. So one person, just his good wishes, and if he is pleased by your activity, his good wishes is a great blessing. Right? So he need not have it, but if he sincerely desires that you should have it, Krishna will arrange that you should have it. You will have it. So blessing is beyond the giver of blessings also. Just like our Bali Maharaj he was going to conquer all the heavenly planets, conquer Indra. So he was blessed by whom? His Sukracharya and all other Brahmanas of Bhrigu dynasty. They blessed him, right? So in that context, Maharaj was making all these points. Then, Dhruva Maharaj's glorious rule and retirement. So after this, Dhruva Maharaj went back to his kingdom, started ruling. He performed so many sacrifices and pious activities, gave profuse charities. And one beautiful verse comes in the context of describing Dhruva Maharaj's rule. Tameva shila sampannam brahmanyam diena vatsalam. Goptaram dharma setuna menire pitaram prajaha. Menire pitaram prajaha. King is considered to be the father of all citizens. Dhruva Maharaj was exactly like that. He was like a father. He was ruling all the citizens. He ruled Bhumandala for 36,000 years, as predicted by the Lord. So all Lord's predictions are coming true. Uttama died. Surichi died. He ruled for 36,000 years. What else is left? Dhruva Maharaj had to go back to Godhead. Dhruva Loka. That is left. That also will happen now. Now after ruling for 36,000 years, Dhruva Maharaj understood this material world is a creation of Maya. Let me give up this kingdom. I ruled sufficiently. Let me go to Badrikashram. So he went. There he performed some deity worship and Ashtanga Yoga. Ashtanga Yoga was an external show only to please other people in Badrikashram. He was actually performing devotional service, deity worship, etc. Then a Vaikuntha airplane came, Viman, with attendants Nanda and Sunanda there. So they glorified Dhruva Maharaj and invited Dhruva Maharaj inside the plane. So Dhruva Maharaj offered respects to all the sages there. He was not arrogant. Although he's staying at Badrikashram and none of the sages were going back to Godhead, but Dhruva Maharaj was going back to Godhead. So he was not feeling proud. See, I'm going. You are still here only. He was not thinking like that. So he was quite gentle. He offered respects to all of them. He took their blessings also. Then he boarded the Vaikuntha airplane. And as soon as he entered the airplane, one thought came in his mind. He said, today I am boarding the Vaikuntha airplane. So how did I end up like this? Because when I was a small boy, 5-year-old boy, my mother instructed me, you should go and worship the Lord. Right? Then, taking her instruction, I went, I met Narada Muni, I performed devotional service, I got Lord's darshan, and now after 36,000 years, I am going back. So Dhruva Maharaj got that feeling of gratitude towards his mother. How can I go back to Godhead alone without my mother? He felt like that. Then as soon as the thought entered his mind, Nanda and Sunanda showed Dhruva Maharaj, see there is another airplane which is taking Suniti back to Godhead. Suniti was also going in a Vaikuntha airplane to Vaikuntha, right? So anyone who assists a devotee also in his devotional service will go back to Godhead along with that devotee. In this context, Prabhupada also writes, so one of my disciples, if he becomes a pure devotee, he will take me back to Godhead. Although Prabhupada is taking everyone back to Godhead, still out of his humility, he says like that. Okay. So that ends the episode of Dhruva Maharaj. And Maitreya gives this benediction. And Narada Muni also glorified Dhruva Maharaj in Pracheta's sacrifice. Pracheta is like very distant descendants of Dhruva Maharaj in his lineage. So Narada Muni glorified after many thousands of years. And he used the Phalastuti of Dhruva Maharaj's episode. Right? So because Maitreya said Narada Muni glorified Dhruva Maharaj in Pracheta's sacrifice, our Vidura asks, who is this Pracheta? Who are these Prachetas? I want to know about them. So to give a background of where these Prachetas are coming and what is their connection with Dhruva Maharaj, our Maitreya Muni continues the lineage of Dhruva Maharaj, description of the lineage of Dhruva Maharaj. So the descendants of Dhruva Maharaj. So Dhruva Maharaj had sons. How many? 3 sons. From one son, he had Utkala and a daughter. From another son, another wife, he had two sons, right? So this eldest son, Utkala, he's a self-realized person, right? He was behaving like a dumb and deaf and blind person, right? Any questions till Dhruva Maharaj's episode? how adharma is coming there. Actually, in one context, Chakravartipada explains, you will be able to appreciate the description of Dhruva Maharaj once you know about adharma lineage. Because adharma is all falsity, all bad, negative qualities are taking birth in that lineage, right? Suddenly, to show contrast, a pure description of a pure devotee is given there, right? So immediately you will be able to appreciate. After eating a very hot mirchi, even a spoon of sugar is very nectarian for you. Ordinarily, you may not want to take sugar, but when you are shedding tears after eating mirchi, you will be able to appreciate, right? So to show that contrast that was given. Because of his determination. Dhrumari is the best example of determination and his dedication to Guru's instructions. So Dhruva Maharaj was so obedient to the instructions of Narada Muni that he did not deviate even an inch. The dedication and determination in following Guru's orders is very very much a point to be noted in Dhruva Maharaj's case. And it's the desire of Narada Muni that his disciple should be like this, right? So a sincere guru and a sincere disciple, that is the combination there, right? So when the disciple is so sincere, guru definitely have the sincere desire that the disciple should go back to Godhead and he becomes a great devotee. So that is that effect, he got it. Although guru will have that kind of desire for every disciple, because this disciple is so determined, he will make the best use of Guru's desire. That is Dhruva Maharaj's case.
One question about Sarguru Sarga. It was explained once, but I could not get it. First canto, there is nothing about Sarga creation.
Not much.
So why it is called as Sarga creation?
First canto is not called Sarga. You are seeing that labeling, right? So many say that Prabhupada never gave those titles. If you see the Jaladuta diary of Prabhupada, he gave first canto and second canto introduction, third canto sarga, fourth canto visarga, like that he gave. So I don't know, somehow that kind of titles came up. You see sixth canto beginning, the canto summary, the chapter summary that Prabhupada gives. So we have written commentary on third canto, fourth canto, fifth canto. Third canto is sarga, fourth canto is visarga, fifth canto is thanam. Now, sixth canto describes poshanam, like that Prabhupada begins. So, many say that Prabhupada did not give those titles that are printed on that book. So, first canto is not creation. There could be some elements here and there. You see, first canto, third chapter discusses the Purushavataras. So there are some 5-6 verses towards the end of second chapter and beginning of third chapter. So there is some creation element there, definitely. And Prabhupada's purports in that section also discuss a little bit of creation. But it's not predominantly creation that you have to title the entire canto is creation. There is some little element of creation, but many other things are also there in creation, in that canto. Like that. As Jiva Goswami says, all these 10 topics are there in all 12 cantos. At the same time, we can clearly see, according to purports of Prabhupada, according to the first purport of every canto of Chakravartipada commentary, that each canto is predominantly discussing one of these topics. Fifth canto is predominantly discussing sthanam. There are other elements also, but sthanam is very prominent in fifth canto, which is not that prominent in any other canto. Could be. May not be from Yamaraj. Because could be. I didn't read a statement, I can't say that exactly, but it could be. We'll take a break after finishing Vena episode. Before entering Prithu, we'll take a break. So Dhruva Maharaj's eldest son is Utkala, because he's a very self-realized and a deep person, a pure devotee. He appeared to be dumb to outside world. So people said, this person cannot be a king. So they made the younger brother Vatsara as a king. Then after five generations, Chakshusumanu appeared. So here the lineage is there. So the Anga was the grandson of that Chakshusumanu, right? That is how Anga, this king Anga, is connected to Dhruva Maharaj's lineage. After some 7-8 generations, he is coming, Anga. So this Anga was a very great devoted king. Once he was performing a sacrifice, and all the devatas who generally appear in sacrifice to accept their shares did not accept the offerings of Anga. Then he was surprised. So, I am performing this sacrifice, why devatas are not coming? Then all the sages suggested, because you don't have a son, in this life you did not perform any sinful activity, but because of your previous activities you did not have a son, that's why devatas are not coming to take part in your sacrifice. But if you worship the Supreme Lord, offer a sacrifice to him, then he will give you a son. Then sages performed a sacrifice for the Supreme Lord and they got sweet rice, okay, and they gave it to Anga. Anga, being a very liberal king, he gave that sweet rice to Sunitha, who is the daughter of Mrityu. Although she is not qualified to take that sweet rice, Anga, being a liberal king, he gave that sweet rice to this Sunitha. And eventually they got a son named Vena. Generally, a child will he will get the qualities of mother's father from grandfather's side, right? It's more likely that a son would get that qualities. So Anga got a ruthless son, Vena, because he's the son of Sunitha, who is the daughter of Mrityu. He got some qualities from that lineage and he became a very wicked personality. And Anga, you know, tried a lot to correct Vena, but he failed to do so. He could not correct him. So he was disgusted. Finally, Anga got disgusted with this bad son who is giving him so much trouble. So he left the kingdom, thinking that he took the whole thing in a positive way. He had a positive outlook for the situation. Having a bad son is better than having a good son. Because bad son is better because he would cause detachment in the father. Being frustrated with the nature of a bad son, father will become detached and renounced and he will take to bhakti. So he took that in that way and he just disappeared from the scene, from the kingdom. And all the citizens started searching for him, but nobody could find him, right? So, and Anga also escaped in the middle of the night so that no one can understand where he is. So all the sages, in the case of emergency, because there was no ruler for the kingdom, they enthroned Vena, although he was not of very good character. They took permission from Sunita also. And sinful men, although this Vena is a bad king, still because of his presence, all the thieves were not troubling the citizens, because they were fearful of Vena. Vena is wicked, he may kill us also. Out of his fear, thieves were not coming and disrupting in the kingdom. So Vena became very proud and he disrespected sages and other exalted people. He stopped sacrifices, he stopped charities, he stopped all religious activities, and sages had a meeting amongst themselves. So Brahmanas always stand above Kshatriyas, right? Although they don't sit on the throne and rule directly and don't do management directly, but they are the guiding force. They give the guidelines for the king so that he manages the show, like that. So now, because the king himself is not a very good personality, he's unable to manage the affairs properly and he's wicked, he's stopping dharmic activities, all the sages, Brahmanas, had a meeting amongst themselves. They said, this Vena is not doing good, so let's try to give him good advice. If he doesn't accept, we'll kill him. Okay, we'll dethrone him. So all the sages went to Vena and said, so you should behave properly. You cannot stop the sacrifices and charity and other dharmic activities. Okay, you are a king. behave responsibly. These are suggestions to you. They said, then Vena very arrogantly said, you are sages and I am king. I am maintaining all of you. You are supposed to be chaste and faithful towards me. I am supposed to be the supreme lord. Right? You cannot be unchaste to me. Whatever I do is correct. Right? And you are supposed to be obedient to me. How are you suggesting me? You are unchaste. He said like that. And sages understood. He became too arrogant. And they, with the power of their mantra only, they killed him. Right? So Vena was died now. After Vena's death, Sunita, out of her attachment towards her son, she preserved that dead body. Then one day, all the sages were sitting and doing their regular duties, and they saw there is a great dust arising because of the thieves. Because there is no king, all the thieves and rogues became prominent and started disrupting the peace of the kingdom. They started looting the people. So they are causing a lot of disturbance, and sages contemplated. We dethroned a bad king, but we never enthroned a good king. Because of the absence of king, all these calamities are happening in our kingdom. So they went to Sunita, took her permission, get the dead body of your son. So she got the dead body of Vena. And they churned the thighs of Vena, and Nishadha came out. So Nishadha is representing the bad qualities of Vena. So Vena's body is a product of the combination of Anga, who is a devotee, and Sunita. So the bad part of Vena's body is separated out in the form of Nishadha, and now it has become purified. Then the sages started churning the shoulder of this Vena. Then a couple, a couple called Prithu and Archi appeared from his body. Right? So the adharmic part is separated in the form of Nishadha. Right? He went into some tribal areas. And the dharmic part, the devotional part, which is coming from Anga, that gave birth to Prithu and Archi. So these are the divine couple. So Prithu appeared. So 14 chapters are done. I think we can take a break before entering Prithu Maharaj's episode. After 5 minutes, we'll meet. Hare Krishna. Was it fast, slow, medium? Okay. 14 chapters done. 15th chapter. So Prithu Maharaj appeared and coronation, then praise. So all the sages churned the arm of Vena's dead body, and Prithu Maharaj and Archi appeared from that churning. So Brahmaji saw Prithu Maharaj. So there was no Balya Leela for Prithu Maharaj. As soon as he appeared, he became the king. And as soon as Archi appeared, she became the queen. There was no marriage ceremony, nothing. That also is not mentioned. They appeared, the divine couple appeared directly. So Brahma, seeing the various auspicious symbols on the body of Prithu Maharaj, he understood he is the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Position. And he is a Shaktyavesh avatar. He represents the Palana Shakti, the ruling power of Supreme Lord. And several personalities in the universe appeared and they offered many presentations to Prithu Maharaj. Kuvera gave a golden throne, Varuna gave a cooling umbrella, Vayu gave two chamaras, Dharma gave a garland of fame, and like that various personalities gave various gifts to Prithu Maharaj. Then presentations list will continue. The entire chapter is about this list only. Parvati gave a shield with 100 moons, Soma gave horses of nectar, Surya gave arrows made of light rays. Arrows made of light rays. You don't ask me how they look like. I never saw. Ocean gave conch. Sages gave blessings. Like that. So Prithu Maharaj. And after that, these bards, they are like professional bards, glorifiers. Sota Magada Vandibhi. They started praising Prithu Maharaj. Then Prithu Maharaj felt little embarrassed and said, why are you glorifying me so much like this? I just took birth. I am a baby. I just appeared. I have never displayed all these qualities. Before I display these qualities, you cannot glorify me like this. Right? So, now I can't say Sridhar Mahaprabhu will be the topper in Bhakti Vaibhav. Okay, we have not completed 6 cantos, you have not got certificates, you have not submitted your assignment, nothing. I can't say he is topper of Bhakti. He may be, but if I say that, he will feel embarrassed. That's why we should not say. So if your words might go wrong, you will incur sins, right? In future, in my absence, you can glorify me. That means, even if you have to praise me, don't do that in front of me. I will feel embarrassed. Do it in my absence. Right? So he was humbly. He was chastising, but it was very humble and gentle. Not that he's becoming angry and ridiculing them. Get lost from here, Esa, I will punish you. He's not saying all that. So he was humbly denying those glories. Like that. Then he said, Supreme Lord's... Even if you have to say something, Supreme Lord's glories have to be sung in an assembly, not a insignificant or low person like me. So it's not worth that you are glorifying me. So qualified person will never have others praise him. What to speak of the unqualified people? It's an insult. A person who is not at all qualified, and if he is being praised, he doesn't have 1 rupee in his pocket, he says, "Arey, you are a millionaire." That is like insult only. Gali de rahe. So he says all this and then stops them to glorify. But by seeing the humble disposition of Prithu Maharaj, all the sages are not, all the bards are more encouraged to glorify him. Your humility is inspiring us to praise you more. And because we are eager for your topics and we are being encouraged by the sages also, we cannot stop glorifying him. We will glorify you for one more chapter. Right, we just glorified you just few verses in this chapter. Next chapter, entire chapter is dedicated for your glories only. Just that, glorifying. Right, you are upholder of dharma. You hold all demigods in your body. Sun, Bhumi, Indra, Chandra, Varuna, Vayu, Agni. All of them are there in your body. Just like king is a personification of all these demigods. He's supposed to do the roles of all this. Right, so they glorify him nicely like that. Then, after glorifying him in various ways, all the bads, sota magada vandibhi. So they predict the future activities of Prithu Maharaj. He will circumambulate the whole earth on his chariot and devatas will glorify him. Just as Indra leveled the earth, Prithu Maharaj also will milk the earth as a cow. So like that, and he will perform 100 horse sacrifice, and Indra will steal the horse in the 100th sacrifice, and he will be taught good instructions by 4 Kumaras, Sanat Kumar. So like that, all this they will predict. Then Vidura becomes inquisitive. Are all the bards are predicting all the future activities of Prithu Maharaj? Now you tell me how all the bards' predictions became true. How Prithu Maharaj exhibited all those things. Then Maitreya continues. Because Vena was such a bad king and he is stopping all religious activities and rogues and thieves are becoming prominent, Mother Earth was not willing to offer her wealth to all those people because religion was not prominent, irreligion was prominent. So Mother Earth was holding back all those resources. And now the king changed, right? The situation changed, but the people were suffering. So all the people went and told Prithu Maharaj after his coronation. So we are suffering because there is no food, grains and other things. We are suffering. Then Prithu Maharaj contemplated, understood the reason. Earth was holding back all this. So Prithu Maharaj became very angry and started chasing Earth. So to invoke compassion, Mother Earth took the form of a cow and started running. Right? Then finally, she could not run anymore and she finally spoke to Prithu Maharaj. Hey, why are you killing me? I'm innocent cow, mother, earth. So you are the knower of dharma. You should be affectionate to the surrendered people. I'm surrendering unto you. So why are you killing me? You cannot kill wretched, poor creatures like me. And I'm a woman also. So how will you maintain your citizens if you kill me? I'm earth. And your citizens are staying on earth. So how will you maintain? Then Prithu Maharaj says, killing you is not adharma, it is dharma. Because you disobeyed my order and you are accepting the share of the sacrifice and you are not giving back wealth. Right? You are not releasing the seeds and grains. You are only a false cow and you are proud, you are infatuated. Like that he criticizes. Even after killing you, I can protect my citizens because of my mystic powers. So I can protect. Then Mother Earth, Dhara, she offers so many prayers to Prithu Maharaj and finally she gives the reason. Why am I holding back the wealth? Why am I not giving them? So I devoured plants created by Brahma because they are being enjoyed by sinful people who have no sense control. In Vena's kingdom, so much chaos was happening. I'm not willing to give my wealth to all of them. That's why I was holding back. But to you I can give. I will give you the process of getting back all that wealth from me also. Right? And she gives the method. So arrange for a calf and a milkman and a milk pot. And I will affectionately give you all the things that you need to maintain your kingdom. So like that she gives the idea. Then Prithu Maharaj follows that. He himself becomes the milkman and milks the plants by making Swayambhu Manu as a calf with the pot of his hands. So like that he makes the sages as milkmen and Vedic verses are coming out and Brihaspati becomes the calf and senses are the pot. So like that, this is like very nicely described. Okay, what is the pot and milkman, etc. And Prithu Maharaj also made the earth flat, right? By crumbling the mountain tops, he made houses, he produced towns, villages and other places. So there is like clear bifurcation. These tribes will stay here, this category of people will stay here, like that. So before Prithu Maharaj, there was no arrangement of towns and villages, right? And people lived here and there like that, right? So he made some organized things there. So now, at Brahmavarta, a place called Brahmavarta, Prithu Maharaj started performing some sacrifices. So he prepared for 1,000 Ashwamedha Yajnas and he did 99 of them. In the 100th sacrifice, Indra was called as Shatakratu because he performed 100 sacrifices and attained the position of Indra. So he became insecure because somebody is crossing my record, he's breaking my record, he's also performing 100 sacrifices, how can I tolerate this? And he disguised himself as a sadhu and stole the sacrificial horse, Ashwa. He stole the Ashwa from Ashwamedha Yajna. What sacrifice will happen? It cannot happen. And before that description of that, Maitri Muni also discusses the glory of Prithu Maharaj's sacrifices. Because Vishnu personally appeared and Gandharvas, Apsaras, sages, all of them praised in those sacrifices. And Bhumi offered all desirable gifts, and rivers offered, trees offered, whatever they have. So like that, Prithu Maharaj's sacrifices are very glorious. That part is there in the beginning of this chapter. Then when Indra stole the horse in the 100th sacrifice, he was creating heretics. He was coming in the form of different types of sadhus, which this world has never seen. And that is creating different sampradayas. So when one of the sages, Atri, he recognized Indra. He recognized that Indra has stolen the sacrificial horse. Then he told. Then Prithu Maharaj's son, his name is Vijitashva. So this person, Vijitashva, Prithu Maharaj's son, he followed Indra. And he saw Indra in sadhu dress. Because he is a sadhu, he got some compassion and he could not shoot an arrow. But he got the horse back. But he left the thief of the horse unpunished. And Indra just left. Then Indra came in form of another sadhu and then he again stole the horse. Then Vijayadasa again came back with the horse. And later Indra started creating darkness while he is stealing this horse. Then Vijitasva did not kill him. So Indra's forms and his different attires as sadhus are creating different symbols of sins. Pakhandis are accepting those forms. Some fashion comes, right? It's a new fashion. Some movie hero introduces some new fashion, new kind of hairstyle. All the Pakhandis, they imitate that hairstyle, right? Something which is nonsensical, looking different from the regular thing, some low character people will imitate like that. So some gentle people who knows the Vedas and who worship the Supreme Lord, they cannot follow what Indra is creating. But now Indra is creating a different thing. Right? Some hero, he just had some different kind of nonsensical hairstyle with something like this. So people started imitating that also. They look so ugly, but because so-and-so hero in so-and-so movie has that hairstyle, they can happily wear that. And others they are acceptable by the other society also. Like that. Then Brahma pacifies Prithu. Now Indra is becoming so adamant and stealing horses. So Prithu himself became angry and he started shooting his arrow to Anindra and says, stopped Prithu, don't kill him. Because you are sitting in the sacrifice, you are the yajaman of this sacrifice, how can you kill someone? With the power of mantras, we will kill him, right? But you cannot kill him. Like that, in this context, Brahmaji arrived and stopped the priests. Priests, you also cannot kill. You are stopping Prithu to kill Indra, but you are trying to kill, but you also cannot kill. Do not kill Indra. He is Lord's body. Somebody who is in power, he cannot come to power without Lord's will. He may have certain shortcomings, but he is representing Lord's power and he is Lord's body. Indra is considered Lord's body. So you cannot kill him. See the disruption of dharma he is causing. Because he is so adamant, he is causing like that. So Prithu, you can perform only 99 sacrifices. No problem. Right? You need not get the glory of performer of 100 sacrifices. Be satisfied with 99. Right? So Indra and you are forms of Lord. You are non-different. You are like as good as two avatars only. So mind of an angry person who meditates on doing what has been destroyed by fate enters into deepest illusion. So, and why not stop Indra? Why are you stopping me? Because Indra has become stubborn, he cannot be stopped. When two children are fighting, although this child is more well behaved than that child, right? He is not appropriate in his behavior. Still, this child only will be stopped. The gentle behavior child only will be stopped because he will anyways not hear. At this point, he cannot take that good instruction. So, someone who can accept it, he will be given that. So, and if you also become adamant like Indra, if you start fighting with him, Indra will create more heretics. That will create more disruption. Better stop only. So, Brahma got this good intelligence. So, Prithu made peace with Indra. He forgave Indra wholeheartedly. Then the Supreme Lord appeared. The 100th sacrifice that Prithu Maharaj has done is sacrificing his ambition to perform 100 sacrifices. That is the 100th sacrifice he has done. So Lord was very pleased with that sacrifice. So Supreme Lord appeared with some Vishnu Dutas and Indra also. And Lord said, please forgive Indra. He did some mistake. And Lord gives several instructions about Jnana and other things. And he finally says, be equipoised in happiness and distress. Be equal to all citizens. And control your mind and senses and protect citizens. Right? That will satisfy me. This kind of instructions Lord gives. He gives Prithu. Thus you will be loved by your citizens and saintly people will give you association. Ask for any benediction. Then Prithu Maharaj offers such beautiful prayers. Although there are only 8-9 of them, each is like a jewel. Varan vibhotad varadeshwarad buddha katham vrinite gona vikriyatmanam ye naragaanam apisanti dehinam tani shakaivalyapate vrinayanacha. So if you want to give me benediction, I don't want that benediction which is meant for people who live in hell. What are those benedictions? Svarga. Then Kaivalya. You are Kaivalya Pati, but I don't want Kaivalya. Because Kaivalya is meant for people who are living in hell. Right? Then you can give best of Svarga happiness also, but I don't want that Svarga also. That is also meant for people who are living in hell. What does that mean? Svarga is not hell. Of course, it is heaven. How can you call it hell? It is heaven only. And Kaivalya is Lord's impersonal effulgence only. But because there is no opportunity for serving the Supreme Lord, that is as good as hell for a devotee. And any exalted position in the entire material world is like hell only. Right? So hell, one small area in this universe below Patal Loka is designated as hell. But technically speaking, entire universe is like hell only because it is a part of material world. As long as you are not in the spiritual world, you are in a hellish condition of life only. That's what Prithu Maharaj meant. So what do you want then? Nakamaye natha tadapyaham kvachin na yatra yushmat charanambujasavaha mahattamantar hridayan mukhachito vidhatsva karanayuta mejamevara. So I don't want to liberation. What I want to hear vidhatsva karanayuta mejamevara. I want thousands of years to hear Krishna Katha from your devotees. And what is the effect of that Krishna Katha? Sa uttama shloka mahan mukhachyuto bhavat padambhoja sudhakananila smritim punar vismrita tattvavartmanam kuyoginam no vitaratyalam varaihi. So what is the effect of hearing from your devotees about you? Because pure devotees always carry your lotus feet in their hearts. When they speak, that sound vibration contains the saffron dust particles of your lotus feet coming through their mouth. And what is the effect of those saffron dust particles? They will enter our ear and create a transformation in our heart by reviving our remembrance of our connection with you. Right? Vidhatsva karnayuta mesham evaraha. Smritim punar vismrita tattva vartmanam. Smriti. We'll get that smriti. That smriti will be revived. Vismrita tattva vartmanam. Our tattva, our true position of being the servants of Krishna, that is forgotten. Smritim punar. Again, we'll remember that by hearing from devotees. I want that. So like that, he goes on glorifying Yesha Shivam Sushrava Ashrama Sushrava Arya Sangame. I want your association of devotees. Then I want the Dasya Bhava. I want to serve your lotus feet. But Lakshmi is sitting there. How will you serve? Are you competing with her? No, no, no. Lakshmi is in conjugal mood. She will serve you in that mood. But I want the Dasya Bhava only. I will serve you in as a mood of servant. He says all this. So, Jagat Jananya Bhaja Jagadisha Vaishasam. So, finally, Lord offered the most beneficial bhakti to Prithu Maharaj and he disappeared. So, Prithu Maharaj returned to the palace, reciprocated with the citizens, right, and earth wonderfully. Now, Vidura, after hearing all these beautiful prayers, also he said, I am not yet satisfied, right? You take sweet rice, you take one full glass, still somebody may ask, I am not yet satisfied, give me one more glass. So like that, I want to hear more about Prithu Maharaj. Please continue. Then Maitreya Muni discusses the rule of Prithu Maharaj, how he is a very ideal king. Then, after describing briefly about his rule, he spoke about the sacrifice that he has performed. So, in a sacrifice where all the demigods, kings and brahmanas, all of them were present, Prithu Maharaj spoke very nicely. Charu chitra padam slakshnam mishtam gudham aviklavam. Right? Sarvesham apakarartham. Tadanuvadanyapa. Right? So, there are different qualities of the speech of Prithu Maharaj. That is also mentioned there. So now he said, my most important duty is to give dharma siksha to my citizens. So please, my dear citizens, perform your prescribed duty. Okay, you belong to certain varna, you belong to certain ashram. There are prescribed duties according to your varna or ashram. Please perform all of them very nicely. Right? So all achievements of dharma, artha, kama and moksha are given by the Lord. Right? And if you perform your duties nicely, I will also get some benefit from it as a ruler of all of you. So like that. And he also glorifies brahmanas and he glorifies devotional service to the Lord. Yat seva, yat pada seva abhiruchis tapasvinam vinirdhita asesha malam dhiyaha. and he continues to instruct about Navadha Bhakti and all those things, then we have become successful by your instructions. We will worship the Lord. That's how the citizens respond to Prithu Maharaj's instructions. Then Prithu Maharaj started worshipping, glorifying the Vaishnavas. So Brahmanya Deva Purusha Paratano, so these are all various verses glorifying devotees. Teshamaham Pada Sarojarenam, these are very elaborate instructions. Then citizens also praised Prithu Maharaj. So while the Prithu Maharaj was instructing the citizens, and in return Prithu Maharaj was being praised by the citizens, in that context four Kumaras arrived there. That is the 22nd chapter. When four Kumaras arrived, Prithu Maharaj felt, hey, how rare is the darshan of these great Kumaras. By your grace, nothing is impossible. Only qualified people can see you. Fortunate householders will receive you at their homes. Right? Unfortunate householders, even though they are rich people, they cannot receive Vaishnavas like you properly. Because they are so arrogant. For example, a devotee goes to some well-behaved householder's house, he will be received nicely, he will be worshipped nicely. If he goes to an arrogant rich man, he will be thrown out. Hey, we don't want books. We don't want anything. Get lost. They will say like that. Or they will show their dogs. So Prithu Maharaj is predicting all this. Right? You underwent severe brahmachari vows during liberation. Although you look like a 5-year-old kids, you are the oldest. You are the first people who are created by Brahma. Right? And I cannot ask about your welfare. I cannot say, how are you? Are you doing good? Of course you will do good. Because you are Atmaramas, you don't need anything for your welfare. You are always in a good position. So what I will ask from you is this. By what means will there be immediate benefit for those suffering in this world? That is the compassion of a Vaishnav. Even Parikshit Maharaj also exhibited this Vaishnav compassion in various contexts in Bhagavatam. After hearing the description of so many hellish planets in the end of 5th canto, in the beginning of 6th canto, he says, how can all the human beings be protected from entering these hellish conditions? Right? A Vaishnava desires the benefit of all the devotees, all the human beings in general. That's what he's asking. Kshemaha kenanjasa bhavet. So Sanat Kumar answers, great question. That indicates your learning and concern for others. Yesterday Radhesham Prabhu was also saying, so when we interact with each other, our questions or our talk should be more about other people than our own selves. That shows how much concerned we are about other people. So he's concerned. So you already have the most beneficial thing, that is fixed attachment to Krishna Katha. So only cause of benefit to human beings is twofold. One, attachment to Supreme Lord. Two, detachment from material body. This is the highest benefit. You said kena kshema. What is the highest kshema? This is the highest kshema. Attachment and detachment. These two. And there are 15 ways of attaining this. Ahimsaya paramahamsa charyaya smritya mukunda charitagra sidhuna yamai rakamai niyamai chapyanindaya. What is that? Nirihaya dhandvatitikshayacha. So this is the highest benefit. So, and the best of all, although I said about 15 items, one is the supreme most in this. Discussing Krishna Katha constantly. Right, that is the highest benediction. So then Sanat Kumar continued his answer. So one needs to develop attraction to the Lord and simultaneously avoid sense gratification. Right? One needs to take medicines and simultaneously follow diet also. Avoid things that are not good for health. So these two one has to follow. So meditation on sense objects leads to destruction of all the four purusharthas. Like that they glorify, and finally they glorify the path of devotional service. Yatpada pankaja palasa vilasa bhaktya karmashayam grichitam udgrathayanti santaha tadvanna rikta matayo yatayo piruddha sroto ganastamaranam bhaja vasudevam. Then kritsro mahanniha bhavarnavam aplavesham shadvargana kramasukhena titirishanti tattvam harer bhagavato bhajaniyam angrim krittvodupum vyasanamuttara dustararanam. So these are all the beautiful glorification of verses of devotion, process of devotional service by Sanat Kumara. Then Prithu Maharaj praises the Kumaras. You come to fulfill Lord's words. Lord predicted that I will meet you. And bards also predicted that I will meet you. So you fulfill those benedictions. So how can I give you Guru Dakshina? Whatever I have is sadhu uchishtam. A kshatriya may hold lot of property, but that property is bestowed on that kshatriya by a brahmana only. So whatever I have is yours only. What can I offer you? He says like that. Only sadhus are qualified to occupy such posts as head of army. But you make us the in-charges, right? Everything belongs to brahmanas, and other three varnas accept their share as remnants of brahmanas. Okay, we can't pay you back. That is our main verse. Yairidrishi bhagavato gatiratmavada ekantato nikamabhi pratipaditana. Continue. Tushyanti adabhrakaruna svakritena nityam konama tat pratikaroti vinoda patram. Who can repay them? If you attempt to repay them, you are like a joker. That's what Prithumara says. Then Prithumara continued to rule. Sanat, four Kumaras left and he continued to rule. So after ruling for a while, he took to Vanaprastha life. So Prithumara ruled and performed activities, thinking that Brahmanas are only performing them. So whenever these great personalities make a statement, it's not like a flowery language, poetic statement which sounds very nice. They live up to that statement for the rest of their lives. He said, whatever I have is sadhu uchishtam, and whole life he is ruling the kingdom as if Brahmanas only were ruling. Like that. So he offered the results to the Supreme Lord, and he begot five sons in Archi. And after growing old, the purpose of his descent was fulfilled. He administered nicely, right? As a Shaktyavesh avatar, he did Palana, Palana Shakti. He did Palana nicely, ruling nicely, and now he wants to retire. So he went to the forest, he performed severe austerities, and eventually he gave up his gross body. And when he went to the forest, his wife Archi also followed him and assisted him nicely in his austerities. And when Prithumaraj left his body, Archi just took the dead body of his husband and performed a funeral pyre and entered that fire. Any other people would say, "Are that poor lady, she became a widow, her husband passed away, nobody was there even to perform the final rites, she alone did all of them and she committed suicide." That could be the modern interpretation of Archie's glorious death. But that's not what we are concerned with. We are more concerned with what all the ladies in the heavenly planet speak about Archi. They say Archi is very fortunate. She worshipped her husband as much as Lakshmi worshipped Vishnu. Right? She has surpassed us, right, in inconceivable actions. Archi has surpassed all the ladies in the heavenly planetary systems. They were appreciating. She attained lots above. What else is difficult? See, we can see people, Archi and Prithu, going back to Godhead in Vaikuntha airplanes. That is the destination. That is the vision of Bhagavatam. Vision of modern material world is to misinterpret these things. What happens beyond death, they can't see. What happens in this world only, they have the ability to interpret with their intelligence. And height is all the demigods, demigoddesses, all the heavenly planet systems, see here, right? So they were glorifying Archi and Prithu and say, "We also desire such glorious human birth," right? So to those who waste their rare human life for sense gratification are cheating themselves and they're killers of their own soul, right? Savanchito patatmadruk krichrena mahatabhuvi. Savanchito, they are doing vanchan of their own selves. Krichrena mahatabhuvi, to get a human birth on this earthly planet, that too in Bharatavarsha, is extremely difficult. And those who are not fulfilling their human mission, being in such glorious position, are vanchito. They are cheating their own selves. Labdha apavargam manushyam vishayeshu visajyate. Labdha, after obtaining apavargam, means that which can cause liberation for you. What is that? Manushyam, a human life in this earthly planet. So vishayeshu visajyate, neglecting all that, vishayeshu, they are just getting absorbed in sense gratification. So Archi attained the same planet as Prithu after being glorified by all these people. So Maitreya gives benedictions. Ye idam sumahat punyam shraddhaya vihita pathet shravayat shrunyadvapi sa prutoh padavim iyat. If one faithfully hears or narrates this beautiful episode of Prithu Maharaj in fourth canto of Bhagavatam, sa prutoh padavim iyat, he will attain the same position as Prithu. So that is the end of Prithu Maharaj's episode. So any questions in Prithu Maharaj's episode? Yes, cool. The same word, it is conjugal also, Madhurya also. He is not competing with the Madhurya Bhav. See, Dasya mood is there in every relation. In every rasa, there is Dasya inherent. Even the Madhurya Bhakta is also a servant. Even the Vatsalya Bhakta is also a servant. That we will understand more in Chaitanya Charitamrita Adilila 6th chapter. Dasya Bhav is there everywhere. So the conjugal aspect of Mother Lakshmi, I don't want to interfere with that. That's what he says. Anything else? So Prithu Maharaj's genealogical line is continuing. So Prithu Maharaj's son is Vijitasva. And you remember, Vijitasva is a very mild person. Although Indra was an offender, he could not lift his bow and shoot an arrow. Because very mild. Such a person cannot be in management. If you are in management, you have to be little shrewd. You have to be little strict. If you are so mild and gentle, other people will manage you. Your life will be managed. So he could not be a king. So he divided the kingdom among his brothers and he left. Right? He gave up kingly duties. Then son of Vijitasva is Havirdhana. He begot 6 sons. So eldest of the 6 sons was Prachina Barhi, and he was expert in Karmakanda. He was so absorbed in performing sacrifices that you need kushagras in sacrifice. He started growing kushagras everywhere in the world so that he can perform more and more sacrifices. That's why his name has become Prachina Barhi. Right? Then he begot 10 sons. Their names were Prachetas, Shatadruti. Is the wife of Prachina Barhi. And after begetting 10 sons, he had sent all these 10 sons for doing austerities. So these Prachetas went to do austerities to get proper qualification to rule the kingdom. Then Lord Shiva came there. And he said, I know your plans. You are planning to worship Supreme Lord. That's why I have voluntarily come to assist you and help you. Right, yah param brahmasa sakshat triguna jiva samgitat bhagavantam vasudevam same bhakta priyosimi. Okay, so that devotee of the Supreme Lord is very dear to me. So that's why I want to assist them. So I will give you a very secret mantra called Rudra Gita. So Rudra Gita has 4 parts mainly. The first part is about offering obeisances to the controlling deities for purification of body, senses and antahkaranas, etc. So he offers obeisances to Vasudeva, who is the upasya deity of Chitta. Then Sankarsana, Pradyumna, Aniruddha. So they are the upasya deities of false ego, buddhi, mind respectively. Then Surya, Agni, Soma. Then Hiranyagarbha, Viratrup, Vayu, Digdevatas. Then Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva himself is the controlling deity of Ahankara. He offers obeisances there also. Right? So these are offering obeisances, Mangalacharan kind of thing, is for the purification of body, senses and other antakaranas. Right? Then, Rudra Gita part 2. That is seeing and serving the Lord's glorious form. So form is most beloved to the devotees. What is that? Darshanam no didukshunam dehi bhagavat architam Rupam Priyatamam Svanam Sarvendri Gunanjanam. That can satisfy everyone's senses. Snigdha Pravridhanasyamam Sarva Saundarya Sangraham Charvayata Chiturbahu Sujata Ruchirananam Padma Kosha Palashaksham Sundarabhru Sunasikam, Priti Prahasitapangam, Alakair Rupa Shobitam. So like that, he describes the Lord form in various ways and also mentions how that form is very dear to the devotees. This is specifically Krishna's form. Then part 3. The devotional service is the topmost process and is attained by associating with devotees. First, obeisances. Second, Lord's form. Third, devotional service. Right? And what is the key for the devotional service? Association. Such a beautiful Lord can be attained by bhakti only. So death cannot touch that bhakta. Even half a moment of association with a devotee is superior to swarga. Tolayamalave napi na swargam na punarbhavam. Right? So that verse also comes here in this context. Then association of devotees is more glorified. Athana kangres tava kirti tava kirti. Pada Kirti or what is that? Tava Kirti Tirtha or Kirti Tirtha. Lord's Kirtis are like Tirthas. Lord's glories are like places of pilgrimage. Because in places of pilgrimage, you go take baths, holy baths, and purify your sins. And if you take bath in the glories of the Lord, you will be purified of your sinful mentalities. That's why Lord's glories are also called Tirthas. Places of pilgrimage. Next, last part. Lord's relationship with this material world. So this is also as Purushavatara, as Brahman. You must have discussed very elaborately in your regular class. Who spoke this? Nimaila Prabhu. Good. Then, how to chant this Rudra Gita and Falastuti? Okay, by being pure and offering mind to the Supreme Lord, you can chant Rudra Gita. Falastuti is Lord is pleased and is conquered. Right? So that is the end of Rudra Gita. And after getting instruction of Rudra Gita from Lord Shiva, all the 10 prachetas entered water and started chanting that Rudra Gita for 10,000 years. They are underwater. Now, come to Prachinabarhi, their father. What's happening with him? You see, you just beget children, leave them for 10,000 years. You go out, do some austerities and come back after 10,000 years. That is instruction in those days. Right? Now every day we need to call. Every day there is WhatsApp call, other things. But 10,000 years you go and get trained. So now he is coming to this place. Prachinabarhi's kingdom. Narada Muni. He asks a question. Oh my dear Prachinabarhi, what will you achieve by karma? Then Prachinabarhi gets confused. First question only. It's like a bouncer for him. My intelligence is bewildered and entangled in fruitive activities. Grahamadis think of family only. Right? We don't have any other thoughts. So no, you only tell. So Narada Muni mercifully shows Prachinabarhi all the animals there. Right? All these animals, you killed them in various sacrifices. They are waiting for you to come so that they can kill you. Right? So they are awaiting Prachinabarhi's death to pierce him with horns. See here, these fellows are killing this animal, right? They will be killed by those animals. Then Narada Muni just with his mystic power just showed him a movie, animation movie there. So Narada Muni begins Puranjana's story. Okay, he cannot understand concept. Let me give an example. He speaks an allegorical story. So there is one person called Puranjan. He has a friend called Avignata, that is super soul. And this Puranjan traveled all over the world to fulfill his desires, but disappointed. Once he entered a city of 9 gates, that is only body. All these 9 gates are 9 holes of the body. And the capital of that city is the heart, right? And all the favorable circumstances for sensual enjoyment is waterfalls and other things. So he met a woman, that is material intelligence. She was being served by 10 servants. They are senses and they are like males. And each of them will have hundreds of wives. Means each of the senses will have hundreds of desires to fulfill. And they are protected by 5-hooded snake. That is vital air, life airs. Right? So she was anxious to find a husband. This material intelligence needs a soul to fulfill her desires. So Puranjan was attracted to her. They got married. And a lot of discussion happens between that woman and Puranjan also. They get married. And that woman is advocating pravritti marga, path of sensual enjoyment, not nivritti marga, right? And they married and enjoyed for 100 years in the city. And the 9 gates of city and the other inhabitants are described in a very nice way, allegorical way. Khadyota means it's the eye. Okay, the eyes of this person are compared to Khadyota and Avirmukhi. So the destination is Vibharajita. That is basically object of sight. So with this eyes, with these two gates, through these two gates, so you approach that person, that place. What is the destination? With these two eyes, you see some object. And who will assist you in that? Dhyuman, sun. Without sun, you can't see. Right? If there is sun, then only you can see an object. So like that, all the 9 gates are very nicely described here. Then Puranjan came under this queen's control, and arms and legs are like two blind persons in the city. So arms and legs have no eyes, right? Wherever the mind takes, they have to walk, right? If the mind says, let's go and eat in some restaurant, legs have to take you to the restaurant and hands have to put the hand in your plate and then give to the stomach, like that. So for all Puranjan's activities followed the queen's activities. When the queen is doing something, Puranjan also does that. Right? Means whatever a person does, he is by following his material intelligence. That's what is said here. Then one day, Puranjan goes to a forest. By the way, this is the answer sheet of His Grace Radhesham Prabhu. Last year, I gave a question. I think you also got a question to make a painting like this. So I didn't have a proper clip art or a BBT painting for Puranjan thing. I just scanned his answer sheet and kept here. So this has everything. Puranjan, chariot and his analogy. These five horses are five senses, knowledge senses. Then this rope is mind. Driver is material intelligence. Then he has a golden armor, that is passion. Inexhaustible quiver, that is so many material desires. And it has three flags, that is three modes. Then this king is Puranjan, that is the jiva, the soul. Then these two pillars are there on this chariot. They are representing illusion and lamentation. And this bow is representing the doership mentality. I am the enjoyer. Then this seat is the heart of the person. And these two wheels are the pious and impious activities. Then these two special arrows are ahanta and mamata, me and mine. That feeling of ahanta and mamata, feeling of possessiveness, ahanta, and attachment. And this axle is pradhan. Then these five arrows in the chariot, special arrows, they are like action senses. They are knowledge senses. Horses are knowledge senses. These are action senses. So like that, this road is royal road to hell. You can go through it later. So like that, Puranjan went for hunting. He killed so many animals mercilessly. And merciful people became unhappy because of that. And Puranjan came back. He was captivated by Cupid. He was searching for his woman, for his material intelligence. Right? So that is the description in that chapter. Then eventually Puranjan became old. So they were living in that city. Puranjan increased his attachment to that queen, and he forgot the ultimate goal of life because of ignorance. So his youth passed away. He begot 1100 sons, 110 daughters, and got all of them married. Family became, you know, thousands, right? And that whole family plundered his home and treasury, right? So with many desires, he worshipped the devatas, material desires. Once he arrived at the point of old age. So old age. So Chandavega attacked Puranjan's kingdom. Means time attacked his body. Then Gandharva king. Chandavega is a Gandharva king. So he has 360 powerful army. Male soldiers and female soldiers. Means days and nights. Right? They came to the city of Puranjan for plundering him. So the five-headed serpent started fighting. Means when death is attacking a person, then the life hairs will fight to live. So five-headed serpent is fighting with the time. How long it can fight? It fought with 720 soldiers, one serpent. So nothing could happen. So serpent became weak. And king and citizens became worried. So then Jara, this daughter of time, daughter of Chandavega is Jara. Jara means old age, misfortune. So she attacked also. Yeah, once she met Narada, you accept me. Narada, I cannot accept you. I curse you to not stay in any place. Okay, that also is mentioned here. And but Narada Muni advised Jara, you go and accept Bhaya, king. Because old age is associated with fear. Jara plus Bhaya. And when the death comes closer, that old age, Bhaya and Prajwara, fever, death fever. When one reaches 107 degrees, he is ready for dying. So all of them combine together and kill the living entity. So Purunjan's death arrives. So Bhaya, Jara, Prajwara, soldiers, all of them attacked Purunjan city. You see that thing. So this five-headed serpent is getting tired because of that. And this soul is being dragged by the soldiers of Yavana, Yavanaraj. So Prajwara sets fire to the entire city. Means basically, Puranjan's body is attacked by fever. That's what Prajwara is attacking the city with fire meant. So when I leave, how can my wife and children continue to exist? These were the thoughts. While leaving his body, Puranjan was thinking, how will my wife stay? How will my children stay? So fear approached and took the king like an animal to the abode of Yavanas. Right? So snake left the city. Means life airs left the city. Means he died. And city was broken down and returned to five elements. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. The city, the body again merged into five elements. And the soul was taken to hell. Like that. As he was being dragged, he did not remember Supreme Lord. That's why he went to hell. Otherwise, he would have gone to Supreme Lord. Like that. So leaving body, this case happens in the case of devotee and a materialistic person also. But what is the difference? After leaving body, devotee will go back to Godhead. Materialistic person will go to hell or other bodies. So Puranjan, what was he thinking while he leaving his body? About wife. He was thinking about a woman. So in the next birth, he became a woman. Right? So he became the daughter of Malayad. He became the daughter of a king of Vidarbha, Vaidarbhi. He became Vaidarbhi and he married Malayadvaja. Right? And they had one daughter and seven sons. And desiring to worship Krishna, Malayadvaja retired to the forest and he went to the forest and Vaidarbhi followed him. Vaidarbhi is this Puranjan only. Then Malayadvaja did his spiritual practices and eventually left his body. And Vaidarbhi realized that her husband died and she lamented piteously. Right? She lit fire on his body and she also decided to die. Okay? Then an old Brahmana approached Vaidarbhi and said, "Oh, who are you? And who is this man?" He asked. "My dear lady, you look like an ascetic. Who are you? Who is this man?" "And who am I?" "I mean, your old friend. We were two swans. We are friends in a lake. You left me with material consciousness and you went to the earth and saw a woman and got married to her. Puranjan. As Puranjan, you got married to Puranjani and then you died because of thinking about a woman. You became Vaidarbhi now and now you are thinking about a man. Right? How long this will continue?" He will say like that. "So in that city, you enjoyed with that woman without hearing about knowledge of self. I am telling you, I am your friend. You are neither Puranjan, you are neither Vaidarbhi. You are neither a man, you are neither a woman. You are neither a eunuch. So you are nothing. We are friends, right? You are a pure soul, right? Dedicated to service of Krishna. So this Maya has been created by me. Because of Maya, you are thinking like this with various identifications. But this Maya has been created by me, by which you think you are a pure woman or a man or anything. So both of us are pure entities." So he gives good counsel to Vaidarbhi. So Narada Muni, like that, he concludes the allegory. Still, this Bhatti Naijala, So Puranjan, this Prachinabarhi, he couldn't completely figure out what's this, right? I don't know what you are saying. You just said some story. What am I supposed to make out? Unless you have very good intelligence, you cannot understand the intended message. Although Narad Muni had spent 5 chapters, still he didn't get complete understanding of it. Then Narad Muni said, transmigrating Jiva is the Puranjan. Lord is Avignata. Avignata is super soul. And the material body is the city of 9 gates. And the material intelligence is the wife. Senses, mind and life affairs are the friends of the wife. 9 gates of the city are 9 openings of the body. Or the directions are 9 gates. So like that, he elaborates this beautiful allegory. Then again, he explains this body chariot analogy. How the material intelligence is driving this chariot of body with this reins of mind, where the horses are different senses. Each horse is trying to grab its own sense object and trying to run in a different direction. And the poor fellow soul is sitting in the chariot and helplessly just wandering from this place to that place because of the senses, uncontrolled senses. So what we need to do is train this material intelligence and make it spiritual intelligence. That will control the mind, right? And make this mind think about Krishna. And that mind will control all the senses, right? And engage in devotional service of Krishna. So when all the senses are engaged in devotional service of Krishna, mind will come under control and material intelligence will be sharpened and soul will go to spiritual world, not remain in this material world, being in a bewildered state. So he says all this. Then this is the thing we have seen earlier. And he continues elaborating on the allegory. Time is Chandavega, old age is this Jara or Kalakanya. Death is Yavanaraj, like that. Then, he gives a direct description of material existence. A jiva, a soul, misuses his minute independence under the influence of various modes, 3 modes, and attains various forms and destinations and bodily forms. It's all about misusing one's independence only. So a person has some free will, some independence, right? And Krishna also will not encroach upon that independence, right? It's up to him how to use that. If somebody has a 10 rupee note in his pocket, whether he will go to buy some flowers and offer them in temple, or will buy some cigarettes and then smoke, that's up to him, right? He has that independence, right? But getting, 100 crores is not within his independence. Whatever is within his control, he can spend it. So because of misusing that kind of independence, he will attain different destinations. An analogy is given beautifully. Dog wanders on the street. Sometimes he will get a bread. Sometimes he will get danda. Similarly, dog searches for that small piece of bread and goes everywhere and takes the danda. So in search of small amount of sense gratification, the soul wanders from one body to another body, one body to another body, and transmigrates between different bodies and eventually stays in this material world only, right? So for that little amount of material happiness that is given. Then attempts of Jiva to counteract these miseries, threefold miseries, remain futile, like transferring burden from head to shoulder. So somebody is carrying a goni on his head. Just by taking that goni from his head to shoulder, he's not reducing his weight. He's just shifting the focus, right? Somebody is in some trouble. If he just goes to a movie and watches that movie, his trouble is still there, but he's just postponing it for a while. That's all. Like that. So Narada Muni very nicely gives beautiful analogies for the understanding of this Prachinabarhi. Then what is the solution? One cannot counteract another action. One action cannot counteract another action. Solution to this troublesome dream is to take to Krishna consciousness. So the remedy, one remedy is to surrender to Krishna, take shelter of Krishna. Understanding that one is being drowned in this material ocean, which is like a dream, he has to take shelter of Krishna. And hearing in the association of devotees leads to seeing the Lord. right? So Shravanam and Seva and Sangha. So this will enhance one's position. It will improve one's position and eventually take him back to Godhead. Like that. So Narada Muni ends this Prachina Barhis rituals by giving a direct description. He gave allegory, right? This is like more elaboration. And understanding that, okay, I gave him the concept, I gave him the example also. Let me give him one more small example, right? He gives a deer allegory, which is just 3 verses long. Once a deer is there, the deer is eating grass along with his wife, right? And he enjoyed the sweet singing of bees. And unaware of the tiger is standing next to it. The deer is enjoying with the female deer and enjoying the sounds of bees and birds chirping there. And a tiger is next to it, trying to just accustomed to eating flesh, and then at any point it can jump and eat this deer. But that is one thing. And there is a hunter behind the deer. So tiger is attacking the deer from one side, hunter is attacking the deer from another side. So that's, the deer's death is imminent. But the deer is absorbed in the association of female deer and absorbed in the sweet singing of the birds and bees there, right? And there is a woman flower also. It's fresh in youth. Okay, these are all more elaborations on that. So basically, Narada Muni wants to make this point that life in this material world is that it's a predicament. So death or danger is there from all sides, but one needs to recognize that. So bees are like children, dogs, and wolves around versus decreasing lifespan. So they are like representing this day and night, passage of day and night. Hunter is the superintendent of death, like that. And he gives a very elaborate description of the science of transmigration of soul. You don't find anywhere else this kind of elaborate description. That was exhaustive, right? And heavy also. So how can one enjoy or suffer for his activities done in a different body? Yeah. Just like, I will tell the essence of this in short. So here, Prachina Barhi got one question. You are saying about suffering. So I suffer in this body. How can I enjoy or suffer the reactions of activities that I have done in a different body? Body changed. Then Narada Muni says, yeah, body changed, gross body changed. Subtle body did not change. So when the person dies, the subtle body, mind, intelligence and false ego, that combination, that is subtle body in which mind is very prominent, that carries the soul from one body to another body, right? Then he has to suffer because with that subtle body only, he has desired so many things and he has performed so many nonsensical activities and he has accumulated a lot of sinful reactions. He can suffer them in a different gross body also. That's only a detail, just like a dress. He says that. And more elaboration on that. Mind indicates the past and future bodies. Right now, somebody is having certain body means in past he must have done something. Right now, he is having this kind of activity means in future he may get a certain kind of body. Propose if someone eats meat, then he may get a tiger body in the next body. If someone is a tiger, he must have eaten meat earlier, something like that. So his current activities indicate his past activities and future activities. This concept comes in many places. So there are more points about transmigration of soul from one body to another body and mind's role in that transmigration, right? So Prachina Barhi retires from the kingdom after hearing such a heavy lecture from Narada Muni for 5 chapters. I don't know how many days he took. So he retires. He doesn't even wait for Prachetas to come back. Okay, I will retire after my sons come back and resume the kingdom. No. At least Uttanapada waited till Dhruva Maharaj came to an age of managing the kingdom. Prachina Barhi doesn't wait for that also. He retires from the kingdom. Now, that's how Prachina Barhi is delivered. Now come to this Prachetas. So, Maitreya Muni or Vidura asked about the Pracheta's activities. Okay, now Maitreya Muni is saying that. So, Prachetas underwent austerities in water for 10,000 years, and Lord appeared to them in eight-handed form. So, Lord said, "I am pleased with your unity. So, for 10 people to live for 10,000 years together without any difference of opinion, without many clashes or conflicts, and all of them doing the same activity is unimaginable. So unimaginable and so inconceivable that the Supreme Lord had to specifically acknowledge that twice in his talk to Prachetas. He said that, I am very pleased with your unity. You are very friendly and you are obedient to your father. And my benediction to you is your son will be a very famous progenitor, Daksha. Then marry Marisha. She is the daughter of Pramlocha. So once a heavenly damsel came and married Kandu, a sage called Kandu. Her name is Pramlocha. And they gave birth to a small girl called Marisha. And after giving birth, that heavenly lady, she just went back to heavenly planets. And this Marisha is left under the care of the trees. Then this Chandra, he came and put his index finger in the mouth of that boy, mouth of that girl, and then she fed her like that. And she grew up. Now she is in a marriageable age. All Prachetas, all 10 of you get married to that one girl. Right? He says, like, you are so united that you can share one common wife also. Like that. So then Prachetas offers such beautiful prayers. Namo namah klesha vinashanaya. Nirupitodara guna havayaya. Mano vacho vega purojavaya. Sarvakshamargai ragatadhvani namah. Shuddhaya shantaya namasvanishtaya. मनस्य पार्थं विलसद्वयाय नमो जगत्स्थानलयोदयेषु गृहीतमाया गुणविग्रहाय लाइक द देर आर मेनी ब्यूटिफुल वर्सेस एंड अगेन द जिस्ट ऑफ ऑल द प्रेयर्स इज दे ग्लोरीफाई द सुप्रीम लॉर्ड इन वेरियस वेज एंड यू बिकॉज यू आर द बेस्ट ऑफ ऑल गिवर्स ऑफ बेनिडिक्शन वी शुड आस्क यू द बेस्ट ऑफ ऑल बेनिडिक्शंस एंड बिकॉज यू आर द अनलिमिटेड सुप्रीम लॉर्ड We have to ask from you an unlimited benediction. What is that unlimited benediction? An opportunity to hear Krishna Katha from your devotees. So we want these two things. Association of devotees, then Yavatte Maya Sprishta Sangasyano Bhave Bhavet. Right? That verse. Yavatte Maya Sprishta Brahmamaya Karmabhi. Tavat Bhavat Prasanganam Sangasyano Bhave Bhave. Right? So we don't mind transmigrating from one body to another body, provided we have an opportunity to associate with your devotees and hear Krishna Katha in their association. That is the gist of all those prayers. And if we worship you, we need not worship anyone because you are the root. So all those things are there. Parijata Andhya Shalabdha, if the bee attains a Parijata flower, it need not go to any other flower for honey. All these like jewel-like verses are coming in those prayers. And they request these benedictions as we discussed. And they also acknowledge Lord Shiva. He's an expert physician. Another nice theme in this canto is gratitude. So after attaining Lord's darshan, Prachetas did not forget Shiva. After boarding Vaikuntha airplane, Dhruva Maharaj did not forget Suniti. Right? So Prithu Maharaj also. He was also very grateful to Four Kumaras. Whatever I have is sadhu chishtam. So like that. Then Prachetas came out of the water and he saw, they saw the whole surface of earthly planet is filled with trees. How will we rule the kingdom if it's filled with trees? They became angry and then fire emanated from their mouth. Mouth only, or eyes?
No, eyes.
Eyes, right? Eyes and they started burning all the trees. Then Brahmaji came, Arey, don't burn all the trees. The daughter of the trees, Marisha, you are going to marry. Right? So he instructed, and Lord also predicted. So they married this Marisha. Then Prachetas went to the kingdom and started ruling the kingdom for a long time, and Lord also benedicts them. You can rule for a long time with full sensual strength. So then they realized they have become little old and they started renouncing. So because of her, then they went to a sage's place called Jajili. The sage name Jajili. So they went and took shelter of him and then started performing their austerities of Vanaprastha there. Then Narad Muni came there. Then he said, because of our family attachment, we forgot instructions of Shiva and Vishnu. Kindly enlighten us, my dear Narad Muni. Then Narad Muni spoke to them how devotional service is the highest. Yoga, Sankhya, austerity, sannyasa, Vedic studies are all useless. Right? Bhakti is the highest. Vedeshu, yagneshu, tapasu, cheva, dhaneshu, yat punya, phala, pratishtam. Atyeti tatsarvamidam vidhitva yogi param sthanam apaiti chadyam. That is Bhagavad Gita verse, similar to that theme. If one performs bhakti, devotional service, he is not deprived of the results of other processes. And he will attain much more than that. So he glorifies the process of devotional service nicely. Right? So these are certain technical verses. And he describes the self-sufficiency of Supreme Lord. And how one has to depend on the Supreme Lord. And one has to satisfy the all-powerful Lord by bhakti only. So thus Narad Muni concludes. And Prachetas, following Narad Muni's instructions, they attain Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? Now, Priyavrata and his descendants, that he has to describe. But Vidura, now third canto and fourth canto are discussion between Maitreya and Vidura. After hearing how Prachinabarhi was delivered by Narad Muni's strong preaching, Vidura became so excited and enthused that now I have to deliver Dhritarashtra. He could not stay and sit there to hear about the next son of Swayambhu Manu, Priyavrata. Then only he said, he offered obeisances, he thanked Maitreya Muni and he went to Dhritarashtra. Okay, now I will deliver Dhritarashtra. Then he did that strong preaching. So 1.13, first canto 13 chapter happened after this incident. Like that. So, yeah, the power of hearing about surrendered kings and all these are mentioned in the conclusion. Thank you all very much. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. Fire is from mouth. Okay. So, any questions in the fourth canto? I am pleased with your, and somebody has that notes, I can show. This is one. Lord glorifies Pracheta submissiveness to Father Prachinabarhi. Then... eighth verse it began, right? I am pleased with your friendly relationship, ask benediction. Then those who remember... ninth also. Those who remember you become friendly with brothers. Not exactly... Okay. So tomorrow we'll have a get together. Morning after Bhagavatam, 9:30 we can meet. 9:30 or 10. 9:30 we'll keep. It'll become 10 anyways.